Je déclare ouverte la 42e séance plénière de l'Assemblée générale. L'Assemblée va poursuivre l'examen du point 75 de l'ordre du jour intitulé « Rapport de la Cour pénale internationale ». Je donne maintenant la parole aux représentants de l'Argentine.
Muchas gracias, señora presidenta. Señora presidenta, la Argentina expresa su aprecio y reconocimiento al presidente de la Corte Penal Internacional, señor Sang Hyun-Song, por la presentación de su informe de la Corte a la Asamblea General. También reconoce especialmente la presentación del informe del secretario general que contiene la información pertinente para la aplicación del artículo 3 del acuerdo de relación entre las Naciones Unidas y la Corte Penal Internacional, como fuera solicitado por la Asamblea General en la resolución 67-295. Señora Presidenta, el Estatuto de Roma y la Corte Penal Internacional constituyen uno de los logros más notables de la diplomacia multilateral y su contribución a la lucha contra la impunidad respecto de los crímenes de lesa humanidad, genocidio y crímenes de guerra es evidente. A poco más de una década de adoptado el Estatuto de Roma, la Corte es un tribunal permanente de justicia penal internacional en pleno funcionamiento. La Argentina se congratula porque el número de Estados partes en el Estatuto de Roma asciende en la actualidad a 122 y el número de Estados que ha ratificado las enmiendas de Kampala es de 11. La otra cuestión que quisiera destacar es el crimen de agresión. Mi país, como muchos otros Estados partes, está comprometido con la ratificación, a la brevedad posible, de las enmiendas de Kampala. A pesar de una referencia sustantiva al crimen de agresión en la resolución de esta Asamblea General, es muy dificultosa por la oposición firme de muy pocas delegaciones. La Argentina continuará trabajando para poder llegar con 30 ratificaciones a una fecha anterior a 2017, para poder activar de esa manera la jurisdicción de la Corte, tal como fue previsto en Kampala. Señora Presidenta, con el correr de los años, desde la entrada en vigor del Estatuto, la necesidad de la rendición de cuentas por crímenes del Estatuto de Roma ha sido integrada en forma tangible en las consideraciones de las Naciones Unidas y de la comunidad internacional en su conjunto. Y el Consejo de Seguridad ha hecho lo propio, integrando a la propia Corte en sus consideraciones sobre situaciones concretas. Todo ello ha afianzado la lucha contra la impunidad, pero a la vez aún existen desafíos que es preciso abordar. La cooperación mutua entre las Naciones Unidas y la Corte es crucial, siempre respetando la independencia judicial de la Corte. La cuestión de los contactos no esenciales con personas sobre las cuales pesan órdenes de captura es parte de la cooperación entre la Corte y las Naciones Unidas prevista en el acuerdo de relación. Y la Argentina agradece al secretario general el haber incluido información al respecto en su informe. Pero fundamentalmente es la cooperación de los Estados con la Corte el elemento fundamental de la capacidad de la CPI de cumplir con su mandato. La obligación de cooperar es particularmente relevante en cuanto a las órdenes de arresto. En cuanto a las remisiones hechas por el Consejo de Seguridad, la Argentina entiende que el Consejo no puede solo tomar nota de los informes del fiscal o de la Corte sin hacer un seguimiento del cumplimiento de la obligación de cooperar con la Corte o de ciertas situaciones en el terreno, como la detención de personal de la Corte ocurrida en 2012. La Argentina, que es miembro del Consejo de Seguridad en la actualidad, está complacida del compromiso asumido por el Consejo en la declaración de la presidencia del 2 del 2013 de hacer un seguimiento efectivo de las decisiones del Consejo relativas a tribunales internacionales, lo cual incluye a la CPI. Urgimos a los miembros del Consejo, entonces, a hacer efectivo ese compromiso mediante un mecanismo concreto de seguimiento de las situaciones remitidas a la Corte. Señora Presidenta, otros aspectos preocupan a mi delegación, pero quisiera destacar uno que se relaciona con la forma en que el Consejo ha hecho remisiones a la CPI y con la forma en que la Asamblea General lo aborda. Se trata de un tema pasible de impactar seriamente a la Corte, al establecer que ninguno de los gastos derivados de las dos remisiones hechas a la Corte serán sufragados por las Naciones Unidas, sino por los Estados partes en el Estatuto de Roma, el Consejo se aparta de lo previsto en el artículo 115b del Estatuto de Roma y el artículo 13 del acuerdo de relación con la Corte. Con un creciente número de casos, se ha identificado la presión sobre los recursos disponibles para la Corte y, en términos prácticos, el no considerar el financiamiento de las remisiones podría poner en riesgo la viabilidad a largo plazo de la Corte. La resolución 67/295, adoptada en agosto de este año, reconoce como cada año la necesidad de financiamiento de las investigaciones y juicios de la Corte, incluso en las situaciones remitidas por el Consejo de Seguridad. Sin embargo, la resolución no hace mención alguna a la forma en que se debe prever ese financiamiento, en particular en lo que hace a las remisiones del Consejo de Seguridad. Ello es así, debido a la oposición de muy pocas delegaciones, a pesar de que se trata de una norma del Estatuto de Roma y del Acuerdo de Relación, como anteriormente lo he manifestado. La Argentina desea enfatizar que la lucha contra la impunidad es un objetivo de los Estados partes en el Estatuto de Roma y también de las Naciones Unidas. Pero ese objetivo debe ir acompañado del compromiso de proveer a la Corte los recursos necesarios para cumplir sus funciones. No es un compromiso extraño a las Naciones Unidas, dado que ya se evidenció respecto de los tribunales ad hoc establecidos por el Consejo de Seguridad. Es preciso ahora abordarlo respecto de la Corte Penal Internacional. La falta de acción respecto de los fondos a ser proporcionados por las Naciones Unidas en virtud del artículo 115 del Estatuto solo afectará negativamente a los casos actualmente ante la Corte y a la acción proprio motu del fiscal. Señora Presidenta, en 2012 se cumplieron 10 años desde el establecimiento de la Corte Penal Internacional. La Corte es hoy un tribunal permanente en plena madurez y centro del sistema de justicia penal de la comunidad internacional. Pero los Estados partes tenemos desafíos ante nosotros. Las cuestiones planteadas por la Unión Africana están en el centro del debate actual sobre la Corte Penal Internacional. La Argentina cree que debemos mantener un diálogo que aborde entre todos los actores esas cuestiones y preocupaciones con franqueza y con el cuidado de no afectar la independencia judicial de la Corte. Para finalizar, deseo manifestar una vez más que la Argentina considera que la Corte Penal Internacional representa una de las contribuciones más notables a la lucha contra la impunidad. Y deseo recordar que la noble misión y la función de la Corte Penal Internacional en un sistema multilateral que tiene como objetivo poner fin a la impunidad, establecer el imperio de la ley, cultivar y fomentar el respeto a los derechos humanos y lograr una paz duradera de conformidad con el derecho internacional y los propósitos y principios de la Carta de las Naciones Unidas, es uno de los objetivos que nos hemos firmado, nos hemos fijado. Y en tal sentido reitero una vez más el firme compromiso de la República Argentina con la Corte Penal Internacional. Muchas gracias, señora presidenta.
Je remercie le représentant de l'Argentine et je donne maintenant la parole au représentant du Liechtenstein.
Merci madame la présidente. This year's debate on the report of the International Criminal Court comes at a time when the court finds itself in the headlines more frequently than any of us could have imagined at the Rome Conference 15 years ago. Some of the court's activities are evoking strong reactions, in particular in Africa, where the court has been most active so far. The challenge for us collectively is to address these political challenges in a manner that is fully consistent with the law contained in the Rome Statute. We are satisfied to see that the necessary dialogue has commenced and look forward to continuing it, in particular among states' parties. The Rome Statute system has put accountability for the most serious crimes within reach of conflict and post-conflict societies. This is a profound paradigm shift following decades of impunity in many parts of the world, made possible by the strong political will of states gathered in Rome. They did so not because they thought that fighting impunity would be an easy thing to do, but because it was the right thing to do. Today, as we discuss the work of the court, we should remember that spirit of Rome. We should be ready for constructive dialogue with the critics, but also ready to stand up for our principles. Looking at the court's judicial record, we believe that it has been doing precisely what we have asked it to do: investigate and prosecute those who are alleged to bear the greatest responsibility for Rome Statute crimes, follow the evidence, apply the law. Nevertheless, the court has been subject to much criticism. Such criticism is in reality often directed against the Security Council, which has referred two cases to the ICC, and thereby extended its jurisdiction over non-states parties. We do not find any evidence that decisions of the court itself are in any manner motivated by politics rather than the law. In order to counteract misconceptions and politically motivated criticism, all states that believe in justice should strengthen their support for the court, diplomatically, politically, financially. We must show greater ownership over the system we have established and also continue to improve it from within. In this regard, I would like to draw your attention to a recent initiative by Botswana, Jordan, and Liechtenstein, which seeks to add a provision to the court's rules of procedure and evidence. This proposal addresses the important issue of presence at trial and the possibility of presence via video conferencing if exceptional circumstances so require. We hope that this initiative can be one significant part of a more comprehensive response to the recent controversies. Most importantly, it would illustrate the willingness of states' parties to do their part to assist the court in a difficult time. States parties should also make every effort to ensure the highest possible quality of judges. Nominating the most qualified judicial candidates is the most important measure in this respect. Recent experience also illustrates that we must put greater emphasis on ensuring witness protection. This is an urgent task and of essential importance for the effectiveness of the court. In this regard, much can be learned from the experience of other international and mixed tribunals. And finally, we must also ensure that we equip the court with the financial resources necessary to fulfill its mandate successfully. Otherwise, budget constraints could hamper the quality of ongoing activities and prevent the court from opening new investigations, as the prosecutor has warned. In this regard, we also must find a sustainable solution for the financing of Security Council referrals in accordance with the relationship agreement. Madam President, we welcome the increased collaboration between the United Nations and the ICC. We commend the Secretary General for issuing thoughtful guidance on limiting contacts with persons who are the subject of arrest warrants or summonses. It is essential that these guidelines are implemented consistently and that their implementation continues to be monitored by the SG's office. We welcome the efforts of certain high-level UN officials to communicate essential contacts with persons who are subject of arrest warrants well in advance. At the same time, we do believe that it is important that all UN personnel do not engage with invitees on their own authority. We hope that states which have not yet done so will develop their own policies on limiting contacts with fugitives based on these principles. Madam President, a significant advance in the relationship between the Court and the United Nations was the adoption of Security Council Resolution 2100. This decision mandated the UN mission in Mali to support efforts to execute ICC arrest warrants related to crimes committed in that country. This could serve as a blueprint for other situations as well, in particular those referred to the ICC by the Council itself. This positive step, however, cannot mask the fact that overall the manner in which the Council deals with the Court remains problematic. Greater consistency by the Council and, most of all, more credible follow-up on its own referral decisions would be in the interest of both the Council and the Court. Madam President, recent events in Syria have reminded us of the importance of the Kampala amendments to the Rome Statute adopted in 2010. In Kampala, we added provisions that criminalize the use of poisonous and other gases, no matter whether they are used in international or non-international armed conflict. But the biggest step forward made in Kampala are the amendments on the crime of aggression. They complement the prohibition of the illegal use of force enshrined in the UN Charter. The most serious forms of the illegal use of force by one state against another will become a punishable offense before the court. The ICC will thereby help enforce the core principle of the rule of law at the international level. With the recent ratifications by Andorra, Cyprus, Slovenia, and Uruguay, we have come an important step closer to the activation of the court's jurisdiction over the crime of aggression in the year 2017. We will continue to offer assistance to states that are interested in ratifying and implementing the Kampala amendments, and in particular also encourage states that are interested in joining the ICC to ratify the Rome Statute in its 2010 version. I thank you, Madam President.
Je remercie le représentant permanent du Liechtenstein et je donne maintenant la parole au représentant de l'Érythrée.
Thank you, Madam President. My delegation takes note of the report of the International Criminal Court and would like to offer some comments on Agenda Item 75 of the plenary session. Eritrea firmly believes in an international order well grounded on the full respect of the rule of law. Eritrea is signatory to the Rome Statute and signed it in good faith. Though a non-state party, Eritrea has serious concerns over the development of the ICC's activities. The current state of implementation does not purport to do what was envisaged at the entry into force of the Rome Statute on 1st July of 2002. Eritrea shares the same concerns recently raised by African heads of state and government during the extraordinary session held in Addis Ababa under the theme Africa's relationship with the International Criminal Court. Indeed, over the past years, instead of serving justice and fairness, more consideration has been given to politics. This approach, unless adequately and immediately redressed, it will further undermine the entire international criminal justice system. Madam President, the African Union has intensely discussed its relationship with the International Criminal Court in light of the evolving situation in some African countries. It is highly regrettable that the repeated requests regarding some cases have not been acted upon by the International Criminal Court, the United Nations Security Council, or the Assembly of State Parties. Moreover, in September 2013, Eritrea, along with other African states, filed amicus curiae observation to the APEC's chamber. These observations elaborate on how a cooperating individual who concurrently holds a high government office should be handled to encourage state cooperation without endangering the constitutional rights of the office holder. Eritrea, as non-state party of ICC, sends this observation willingly to offer information in order to help the court by expounding the law impartially. The unacceptable treatment of African states and their leaders by the ICC is aggravating the current situation rather than addressing the root cause of the problems. The present challenge is not only a question about the future management of international criminal justice, including the cases of impunity and violence around the world, but it is also about the way in which nation states relate to each other in the context of the international justice system. Madam President, challenges are better addressed through candid and realistic exchange of views based on the full respect of the rule of law within the family of nations. We hope that we could act in a manner that reflects a deep understanding of the complexities of nation building as revealed by several African cases and the African Union discussions on the ICC. In this context, let me add the voice of Eritrea in urging the UN General Assembly to work for a comprehensive reform of multilateral institutions, including the UN Security Council and the ICC. Our collective efforts for justice, equality, and fairness must continue to be consolidated. My delegation wishes to stress that the notion of an effective multilateral system could only be realized if it is based on an ambiguous and transparent rule that applies to all players without selectivity, polarization, and double standards for a long-standing relationship based on a shared commitment to peace, security, justice, and opportunity. Thank you, Madam President.
Je remercie le représentant de l'Érythrée et je donne maintenant la parole au représentant de l'Australie.
Madam President, Australia would like to thank President Song for his report. Australia is both shocked and appalled that today, some 70 years after World War II and 20 years after the tragedies in the former Yugoslavia and Rwanda, serious international crimes are continuing to be committed and committed on an alarming scale. Every day we are presented with fresh evidence that children, women and men have been the victims of unimaginable atrocities that deeply shock the conscience of humanity. All too often, such crimes are neither investigated nor prosecuted, which sends a dangerous message to would-be perpetrators that their acts will be tolerated. It was in response to these concerns that the International Criminal Court was established. States have the primary responsibility to prosecute serious international crimes committed in their territory or by their nationals. However, as a court of last resort, the ICC has a critical role to play in advancing the international community's fight against impunity. This is why Australia is and will remain an unflinching supporter of the ICC, and why we will do everything in our power to help achieve the aims and objectives of the Rome Statute. Madam President, we commend all organs of the court on the contribution they have made so far to to the establishment of the court as a significant part of the international architecture. The international community can take great pride in the progress that has been made since the adoption of the Rome Statute. In particular, we welcome the surrender this year of Bosco Ntaganda and the ratifications of the War Crimes and Crimes of Aggression amendments by a growing number of states. We also welcome the ratification of the statute this year by Côte d'Ivoire and the progress being made towards universalization of the Rome Statute, which Australia is actively working on, including in the Pacific region. We encourage states that have not yet done so to ratify the Rome Statute, to join Australia and the parties to the statute in seeking justice for the victims of serious international crimes. Madam President, in providing our unwavering support to the court, we acknowledge the concerns raised regarding the ICC's approach to a number of matters, including those raised by the African Union in relation to the cases against Kenya's President Kenyatta and Deputy President Ruto. Australia has welcomed the opportunity to engage in an exchange of views with the African Union and with Kenya. We are ready to listen closely to those concerns. We are also confident that we will be able to work together to find a constructive way forward, and also look forward to discussions on this issue at the upcoming ICC Assembly of States Parties. While solutions are being discussed, it is important to recall that all states must fulfil their obligations under international law, whether those obligations derive from being a party to the Rome Statute or from resolutions of the Security Council. We also take this opportunity to underscore our view that it is imperative that the Security Council provide ongoing support to the ICC, especially in relation to those situations it has referred to the court. At the same time, we wish to welcome the Secretary-General's guidance to the UN Secretariat on contact with persons subject to arrest warrants and call on the United Nations to implement this policy strictly. Madam President, the International Criminal Court was born out of the international community's collective commitment to hold those accused of serious international crimes to account and to bring at least a measure of justice to the victims of these crimes. This is a goal that we surely all share. Australia, for its part, remains committed to working with all states to ensure that we turn this aspiration into a reality. Thank you, Madam President.
Je remercie le représentant de l'Australie et je donne maintenant la parole au représentant du Mexique.
Muchas gracias, señora presidenta. México desea agradecer al juez Sang Yung-Song, presidente de la Corte Penal Internacional, por la presentación del noveno informe anual de la Corte ante esta Asamblea General. Damos la bienvenida al señor Herman von Hebel como secretario de la Corte, así como al señor James Stewart como fiscal adjunto de ese tribunal en funciones de inicios de 2013. Les deseamos a ambos el mayor de los éxitos en el desempeño de sus responsabilidades. México encomia la adhesión de Côte d'Ivoire al Estatuto de Roma en el periodo comprendido en el informe, con lo que sumamos ya 122 estados parte al mismo. Reiteramos nuestro enérgico llamado a los estados que aún no lo han hecho a que se adhieran al Estatuto de Roma en el corto plazo. La pronta universalización de este importante instrumento es una meta que no debemos perder de vista en nuestro objetivo común de combatir la impunidad por los crímenes más atroces en el mundo. Señora Presidenta, el informe hoy presentado da muestra de sólidos progresos en la labor judicial y de investigación de la Corte. Este periodo incluyó, entre otros, la primera entrega voluntaria por una persona sujeta a una orden de arresto de este tribunal, una creciente actividad judicial en lo relativo al sistema de participación de víctimas y a las reparaciones, y el inicio de una investigación en una situación referida por el propio Estado en 2012. Ello, aunado a los avances judiciales en las diversas situaciones que examina la Corte, evidencia no solo la progresiva consolidación de la jurisprudencia penal internacional, sino también la creciente credibilidad y confianza en el sistema creado por el Estatuto de Roma. Señora Presidenta, a pesar de los innegables progresos, persisten algunos retos fundamentales para que la Corte pueda cumplir efectivamente con su mandato, respecto de los cuales esta organización puede contribuir positivamente. En primer lugar, coincidimos con el presidente de la Corte en la necesidad del apoyo firme y constante de la comunidad internacional. México es y ha sido un activo promotor de este tribunal y refrenda su continuo apoyo a la Corte Penal Internacional y a los objetivos para los que fue creada. Subrayamos la relevancia y utilidad que representa la Corte como órgano judicial independiente de naturaleza permanente para combatir la impunidad por los crímenes más graves de trascendencia internacional cuando el Estado no está dispuesto o no puede realmente hacerlo. Encomiamos el continuo diálogo y colaboración que mantiene esta organización con la Corte y alentamos a la organización a continuar con estos trabajos. En el mismo sentido, encomiamos al presidente de la Corte y a sus demás órganos por su participación en la sesión especial sobre el derecho penal internacional celebrada en abril pasado en la Organización de los Estados Americanos, derivada de la resolución que presenta bianualmente México en esa organización. Señora Presidenta, en segundo lugar, mi delegación quisiera subrayar la esencial importancia que reviste la cooperación de los Estados para la ejecución de las órdenes de arresto y detención emitidas por la Corte. México lamenta la falta de cooperación abierta y expresa que han mostrado algunos estados en la Corte, lo cual atenta contra la efectividad del sistema y perpetúa la inaceptable impunidad por estos graves crímenes. Celebramos, como lo hace el informe, la adopción de la política revisada de las Naciones Unidas sobre contactos no esenciales con personas sujetas a órdenes de detención de la Corte e instamos a la organización a implementar su política estrictamente a efecto de contribuir a promover la cooperación con la Corte. Por su parte, se observa en el informe que las dos situaciones remitidas por el Consejo de Seguridad a la Corte enfrentan falta de cooperación tanto del Estado concernido como de otros estados, y que en algunos casos esa falta de cooperación ha sido notificada por la Corte al Consejo de Seguridad. Subrayamos la imperante necesidad de que el Consejo de Seguridad dé un efectivo seguimiento a las situaciones que remite a la Corte como herramienta para contribuir a la cooperación de los estados con dicho tribunal. Celebramos el debate abierto que sostuvo el Consejo de Seguridad en octubre de 2012 sobre el papel de la Corte y los instamos a continuar realizando iniciativas que propicien el fortalecimiento de la relación entre ambos órganos. Señora Presidenta, en tercer lugar, México quisiera recordar un aspecto esencial para la efectiva consolidación de la Corte, que es la asignación de recursos suficientes a ese tribunal para que pueda llevar a cabo efectivamente sus labores. A este respecto, instamos a esta Asamblea General de las Naciones Unidas a que en el marco de la competencia que le corresponde, implemente lo dispuesto en el artículo 115 del Estatuto de Roma, a fin de asignar fondos suficientes a la Corte para financiar los gastos efectuados en relación con situaciones que le son remitidas por el Consejo de Seguridad. Finalmente, señora Presidenta, y ante las violaciones que actualmente se cometen en diversas partes del mundo, México desea subrayar la importancia de que el Consejo de Seguridad se guíe por criterios objetivos y no politizados en la remisión de situaciones a la Corte Penal Internacional, como herramienta de respuesta internacional para contribuir a asegurar que los crímenes internacionales no queden impunes. México refrenda su compromiso con la Corte Penal Internacional y se muestra dispuesto a continuar colaborando en el objetivo común del combate a la impunidad por crímenes internacionales, tanto dentro de esta organización como en los demás foros pertinentes. Muchas gracias.
Je remercie le représentant du Mexique et je donne maintenant la parole à la représentante de l'Estonie, présidente de l'Assemblée des États partis au statut de Rome et de la Cour pénale internationale. Excellence, vous avez la parole.
Thank you, Madam President. Estonia aligns itself with a statement that was delivered on behalf of the European Union. This present statement is in my capacity as President of the Assembly of States Parties to the Rome Statute and Estonia's Ambassador at Large. The report of the Court demonstrates how the Court is working to meet the challenging mandate that states gave to it under the Rome Statute. There are now 8 active situations under the Court's consideration, a considerable number of which were referred by the states concerned. Over the past year, 2 more countries referred their situations to the court, thereby expressing confidence in this judicial institution. The increasing membership of states parties to the statute further demonstrates this confidence. Over the past years, we have witnessed a steady increase in the number of states parties. This number now stands at 122. 11 states have ratified both amendments to the Rome Statute, which were adopted at the Assembly's Review Conference in Kampala in 2010, and 3 more states have ratified 1 amendment to the statute. Madam President, states are responsible for the Rome Statute system. States negotiated the Rome Statute, and states are responsible for the Court's success and development. States within the Assembly have been working collectively throughout this past year to reinforce their support to the Court in critical areas like cooperation and assistance to victims. Some of these activities have been undertaken outside the 2 traditional places where Assembly members work, The Hague and New York, in different capitals to advocate for reinforced assistance and to conduct very focused discussions with policymakers. The Assembly holds 1 annual session a year, this year in The Hague from 20th of November. It is crucial that all parties to the statute participate in this meeting, as the Court and the Rome Statute have come under increased focus in different fora. This session will be a critical moment to demonstrate our resolve to fight impunity. The annual Assembly session provides an excellent opportunity for a political discussion on all matters of concern to states' parties. One such opportunity is the general debate. This year, states are encouraged also to speak on the subject of complementarity, to inform about their efforts to create genuine infrastructures for accountability for atrocity crimes. Additionally, given that all active situations are in the African continent, and at the request of African states, the upcoming Assembly session will allocate a special segment to discuss some of the concerns voiced by African states' parties. I have also invited a high-level representative of the African Union to address the opening plenary of the Assembly. As we prepare for the upcoming Assembly session, we must also bear in mind the victims of atrocity crimes. This includes assistance and reparations as provided under the statute. Madam President, states are encouraged to attend and actively participate at the annual meeting of the Assembly of States Parties in order to strengthen our work towards accountability for the most serious crimes of concern to the international community as a whole. Thank you very much.
Je remercie la représentante de l'Estonie et je donne maintenant la parole au représentant des États-Unis.
Thank you, Madam President. We'd like to thank President Song of the International Criminal Court for his presentation of the ICC's 9th annual report to the General Assembly, covering the period from August 1, 2012 to July 31, 2013. We recognize President Song for his continued service to the ICC. Strengthening accountability for those responsible for the worst atrocities remains an important priority of the United States. President Obama has repeatedly emphasized the importance of preventing mass atrocities and genocide as a core national security interest and a core moral responsibility of the United States. The United States is committed to working with the international community to bring concerted international pressure to bear to prevent atrocities, ensure accountability for the perpetrators of these crimes. Although the United States is not a party to the Rome Statute, we recognize that the ICC can and does play an important role in a multilateral system that aims to ensure accountability and end impunity. The ICC, by its nature, is designed only to pursue those accused of bearing the greatest responsibility for the most serious crimes within its jurisdiction, and when states are not willing or able to genuinely investigate or prosecute. We therefore continue to support positive complementary initiatives by assisting countries in their efforts to develop domestic accountability processes for atrocity crimes. Accountability and peace begin with governments taking care of their own people. The international community must continue to support the rule of law capacity, building initiatives to advance transitional justice, including the creation of hybrid structures where appropriate, and must develop a shared approach to recurring issues such as coordinated and effective protection for witnesses and judicial personnel. From the Democratic Republic of Congo to Senegal's efforts with the AU to prosecute Issene Abre, the United States continues to support efforts to build fair, impartial, and capable national justice systems, as well as hybrid tribunals where appropriate. At the same time, we must strengthen accountability mechanisms at the international level. We will continue to work with the ICC to identify practical ways in which we can work to advance our mutual goals on a case-by-case basis and consistent with U.S. policies and laws. In the past year, for example, we worked with the court and other states to help assist in the voluntary surrender to the ICC in March of Bosco Ntaganda, allegedly responsible for atrocities committed in the Democratic Republic of Congo. This was an important moment for all who believe in justice and accountability. And in January, President Obama signed into law an expansion of the United States War Crime Rewards Program to permit the offer of rewards for information leading to the arrest, transfer, or conviction of individuals accused of criminal responsibility for genocide, war crimes, or crimes against humanity by any hybrid or international criminal tribunal, including the ICC. Shortly thereafter, we added a number of individuals subject to ICC warrants to our rewards list, including Joseph Kony in the Uganda situation and Sylvester Mutakamura, still at large in the DRC situation. We look forward to continuing to engage with state parties and other states on these and other shared issues of concern, such as information sharing and witness protection. Madam President, it is critical that the international community remain committed to working toward coordinated efforts, both to prevent atrocities before they occur and to provide accountability for those responsible for atrocities that do happen. Although the international community has made progress on both fronts, much work remains. The United States remains committed to working in partnership with others to achieve these goals. We look forward to continued discussions here at the United Nations and to our upcoming participation as an observer at the ICC's Assembly of States Parties in The Hague next month. Thank you, Madam President.
Je remercie le représentant des États-Unis et je donne maintenant la parole au représentant du Brésil.
Thank you, Madam President. Madam President, I join others in thanking the President of the International Criminal Court, Judge Sang-Hyung Song, for his statement and for presenting the ninth report of the Court to this General Assembly. I commend the judges of the ICC for their role in contributing to the rule of law and to the development of international criminal law. Madam President, Brazil remains steadfast in its commitment to the Rome Statute and to the cause of justice that is its raison d'etre. On the independence of such an important judicial institution and on the universality of its reach lies the foundation of its legitimacy. And legitimacy is perhaps the single most important basis for bringing before justice accused persons, with fairness and full respect for their rights. Therefore, Brazil is a staunch supporter of the Court's universality. Two-thirds of the UN membership have ratified the Rome Statute, but this does not make it universal. We need to ensure further progress towards the adherence of all UN members. Enhancing the Court's legitimacy through universality is a means to promoting peace and justice. In this context, I am pleased to recall that all South American countries are parties to the ICC. Madam President, let me underscore the importance we attach to the first review conference of the Rome Statute, which took place in Kampala in 2010, in which Brazil was an active participant. The activation of the Kampala Amendments in 2017 will represent a major contribution to completing the international criminal justice system adopted in Rome in 1998. We also welcome the fact that the Court has issued its first judgment in the Lubanga case, while noting that its workload is increasing, including by territorial state referrals or self-referrals by a number of countries. On the other hand, Brazil has spoken out about issues of a structural nature that go to the heart of the relationship between the Court and this organization. First of all, we reiterate that the prerogative of the Security Council of referring cases to the ICC must be used with caution and only exerted after other tools have proven to be inadequate or insufficient, and after thorough consideration has been given to its repercussions for the prospects of peace and reconciliation. Moreover, the Council must be rigorous and take a principled approach when pursuing the referral track, avoiding double standards and selectivity. However, we regret that the two referrals up to now have been stained with the notion of selective criminal accountability, by which certain categories of individuals are exempted from ICC jurisdiction. Also, the acknowledgement of the importance of Article 13 of the mentioned agreement on the conditions under which any funds may be provided to the Court when it incurs in expenses due to Security Council referrals must go beyond rhetoric. President Song himself has questioned the sustainability of a system under which referrals are made, but the costs of any investigation and trial proceedings are met exclusively by the parties to the Rome Statute. Brazil has made an explanation of vote after the adoption of Resolution 67/295 to voice in unambiguous terms our deep concern over this issue. We agree with South Africa that any say of the Security Council on budgetary aspects of a referral usurps the competences of this Assembly and violates Article 17 of the UN Charter. Madam President, the latest developments in Africa, including the results of the latest extraordinary summit of the African Union, are a powerful reminder of the need for the Security Council and the Assembly of States parties to engage constructively with African states. We need to exercise diplomatic wisdom in order to preserve, on the one hand, the instruments of international criminal justice that we have been building up, and, on the other hand, to be sensitive to requests which are legally sound and reflect wide political support. We must be able to hear the concerns expressed without reservation by African states. We are convinced that there exists institutional space to diffuse polarization, uphold the respect for international law and the rule of law, and address the questions raised by African Union members. The quest for peace and justice is always challenging. It is a key common purpose of both the United Nations and the ICC. Our efforts in this regard must be informed by the shared values that bring this Assembly together and have made the first permanent treaty-based international criminal court a reality. Brazil stands ready to continue to contribute to strengthen both objectives. Thank you very much.
Je remercie le représentant du Brésil et je donne maintenant la parole au représentant permanent de la Nouvelle-Zélande. Excellence, vous avez la parole.
Thank you, Madam President. New Zealand thanks President Song for his report and pays tribute to his ongoing service and that of his fellow judges to the International Criminal Court. New Zealand, Madam President, has traditionally been a very strong supporter of the court. We've invested in the success of international judicial mechanisms, particularly the ICC, and we've been active in encouraging wide membership of the Rome Statute, including through work to that end in our own Pacific region. We continue to urge widespread membership of that statute and will maintain that effort. Madam President, New Zealand is committed to the principle of accountability and to the fight against impunity. We also recognise that there is a variety of ways to address grave crimes committed in conflict situations and to rebuild communities after the commission of atrocities. National courts have primary responsibility for the prosecution of these crimes, and New Zealand supports a focus on complementarity. We've also seen the real value and sense of alternatives to formal judicial processes, such as truth and reconciliation commissions. Moreover, in particular situations, regional courts also make a lot of sense. These are complementary to both national and international mechanisms. In this regard, New Zealand is pleased to be involved in supporting the development of the African Court of Human and People's Rights. This diversity of judicial and non-judicial responses to allegations that grave crimes have been committed in conflict situations shows us that every situation has its own complex dynamics. There is no single right answer. Finding a sustainable situation and a solution in a particular conflict situation, which is also inevitably riven with politics, requires much more than technical application of criminal law. Madam President, we cannot hide from the reality that the ICC is currently facing the strongest challenge of its 10-year existence. New Zealand recognises the very real concerns of the African Union and Kenya and believes that those concerns require careful and serious consideration. We see these current challenges to the court also as an opportunity to put the ICC on a more solid footing so that it can continue to serve the international community into the future. The independence and impartiality of the court and its processes are of utmost importance and must be protected. However, as states, we have the responsibility to engage in open dialogue about those challenges. Most importantly, we should be prepared to signal when we think changes might be required. When a court loses credibility in the eyes of a large sector of community opinion, then those with political and legislative responsibility have a right and a duty to act to restore that credibility and to restore that effectiveness. To this end, New Zealand believes that there are ways in which the Assembly of States parties can and should respond to the concerns of those state parties who have raised their concerns. States parties, both individually and acting collectively through the Assembly of States parties, have a responsibility to shoulder some of the burden for making the ICC work effectively. Rules are important and must be respected, but they are never cast in stone. If there is a problem with rules, states parties must be willing to sit down with colleagues to work constructively to address those concerns. We must look for procedural solutions, including the use of modern technology, and to find pragmatic ways to address the reality of having a sitting head of state before the ICC. We urge that all states parties go to the ASP meeting in November ready to engage in this work and willing to find solutions. The court and its rules must not make it difficult for states parties to cooperate. The court's framework should be able to accommodate a more flexible and pragmatic approach to participation in proceedings, an approach which recognises exceptional circumstances. In such situations, we need to empower the court to facilitate cooperation. All involved in the work of the court, including the Office of the Prosecutor and states parties, must act in ways that support and incentivise cooperation and that take proper account of the long-term interests of the court and the wider international community. Madam President, as a result of concerns, including over the current cases before the ICC, Kenya and the AU member states have called on the UN Security Council to defer the Kenya cases. Under Article 16 of the Rome Statute, the right to request a deferral unquestionably exists, and that should be recognised. There is a legitimate expectation that when issues related to the ICC are raised, the UN Security Council will act responsibly and respectfully. The request by the AU and Kenya must therefore be considered by the Security Council with an open mind and with a true willingness to hear and give proper consideration to all sides of the argument. New Zealand therefore believes that the power of deferral, like the power of referral, should be used with great care and restraint, as was emphasised in respect of referral by Brazil just a moment ago. But New Zealand also believes that we should not be afraid to use that power in appropriate circumstances. Deferral should contribute to international peace and security, and it must be temporary in nature. In this regard, New Zealand notes that a deferral might allow further time for the court and the ASP to work on resolving the concerns that have been raised by Africa. It's essential for the continued viability of the ICC for there to be an honest and respectful recognition of the challenges and an openness to dialogue as to how best those challenges might be met. Madam President, it's because of our consistent and strong support for the International Criminal Court that New Zealand believes that it's necessary to challenge the ICC and the ASP to work on addressing the concerns that have been raised. In short, Madam President, New Zealand is committed to playing its part in these challenging times and to resolving these issues in a manner that will allow the ICC to thrive as a significant and permanent part of the international architecture.
Je remercie le représentant permanent de la Nouvelle-Zélande et je donne maintenant la parole au représentant permanent de l'Uruguay.
Merci, Madame la Présidente. Señora Presidenta, quisiera agradecer al señor Presidente de la Corte Penal Internacional, Sang Hyun-Song, por presentar el informe anual de la Corte. Uruguay ha sostenido históricamente la solución jurídica de los diferendos, de conformidad con lo establecido en la Carta de las Naciones Unidas. Hoy deseamos destacar la importante actividad de los tribunales internacionalmente constituidos a fin de impartir justicia, juzgando a los infractores, quienes quieran que estos fueren y donde quiera que se encuentren. Así fue que, luego de las atroces violaciones de los derechos humanos en la década de los 90 en Ruanda y la ex Yugoslavia y la creación de los respectivos tribunales ad hoc, la comunidad internacional entendió que finalmente debía existir una Corte Penal Internacional para con ello disuadir de que estas aberraciones se vuelvan a repetir y en su caso juzgar a sus causantes con todo el peso del derecho, ya sea en el ámbito nacional o internacional. Señora Presidenta, este año celebramos el 15º aniversario de la adopción del Estatuto de la Corte Penal Internacional. Conmemorar este aniversario es celebrar el desarrollo y la evolución histórica del derecho internacional, pero fundamentalmente es rendir un homenaje a la madurez de la comunidad internacional en su lucha contra la impunidad. Nuestro país ve con satisfacción que desde la firma del Tratado de Roma a la fecha, la membresía de la Corte ha aumentado notoriamente. Los 122 miembros se aproximan a los 2/3 del total de miembros con que actualmente cuentan las Naciones Unidas. Esperamos que la tendencia se mantenga e incremente a fin de que las membresías de ambos organismos en un futuro no lejano puedan ser iguales y que la competencia de la Corte se extienda de pleno derecho a toda la humanidad. Asimismo, hacemos votos para que los Estados miembros permanezcan en dicha calidad y reconsideren la idea de denunciar el Tratado de Roma, ya que esto implicaría un nocivo paso atrás en la primacía de la justicia en los actos cometidos por el hombre. Señora Presidenta, Uruguay, luego de ratificar el Estatuto de Roma, fue el primer país de América Latina en instrumentar su implementación por ley. En el presente año, tiene el alto honor de haber sido el primer Estado de Latinoamérica en haber depositado el instrumento de ratificación de las enmiendas de Kampala al Estatuto de la Corte Penal Internacional. Los dos actos mencionados ponen de manifiesto nuestro nivel de compromiso con la Corte. Así es que hemos arribado a 11 Estados miembros que han ratificado dichas enmiendas y alentamos a los otros Estados, miembros de la región y de otras regiones, a que hagan lo propio, a fin de que las mismas entren en vigor en el menor tiempo posible, esto es, en el 2017. A su vez, tomamos la decisión de asumir la responsabilidad de convertirnos en coordinador regional por el GRULAC para casos de no cooperación con la Corte, magna tarea que en forma conjunta con los restantes 3 coordinadores nos permite contribuir con la gestión de la Presidenta de la Asamblea de Estados Parte cada vez que suceda un caso de no cooperación. Abogamos por contar en breve con el último coordinador regional de una región que a la fecha no se encuentra representada. Ambos pasos, dados en el presente año, denotan el alto compromiso que tiene el Uruguay con la Corte Penal Internacional en tanto representante de la Justicia Penal Internacional. Señora Presidenta, con relación a los casos referidos a la Corte por el Consejo de Seguridad, estimamos satisfactorio que esta práctica se haya instalado en el mismo y abogamos por su continua utilización. Seguimos observando que el impacto de los conflictos armados, así como el incremento de los responsables por violaciones graves contra los derechos humanos, sigue siendo por demás preocupante. Como correlato, consideramos que el Consejo de Seguridad debería actuar en forma consistente ante situaciones o casos similares. No podemos pretender que el Consejo se sienta obligado por sus actuaciones anteriores, ya que no se trata de un órgano jurisdiccional, sino político. Pero igualmente, habiendo sido el órgano empoderado por la Carta a fin de mantener la paz y la seguridad internacionales, actuando a nombre de toda la comunidad internacional, debería actuar con responsabilidad no selectiva en cada situación en que la paz se vea amenazada. Por dicha causa, coincidimos con un grupo de países que entendieron conveniente solicitar al Consejo de Seguridad que éste remitiera el caso de las violaciones a los derechos humanos en Siria a la Corte para el respectivo enjuiciamiento de sus perpetradores, independientemente de quiénes sean estos o a quienes representen. En este contexto, entendemos que sería recomendable que los miembros permanentes del Consejo de Seguridad consideren abstenerse de utilizar el veto para bloquear la acción del Consejo. Señora Presidente, es muy claro que de conformidad a lo establecido en el artículo 115, literal B del Estatuto de Roma, las Naciones Unidas deberían contribuir con los gastos que acarrean las remisiones que la organización efectúa a través del Consejo de Seguridad a fin de compartir la carga financiera de la justicia penal internacional. En función de ello, esperamos que de conformidad con el artículo 13 del acuerdo de relacionamiento entre ambos organismos, se proceda en lo sucesivo y a la brevedad posible a los arreglos respectivos que permitan implementar esta cooperación. Por lo expuesto y para concluir, consideramos que debe haber una profundización en la cooperación existente entre el Consejo de Seguridad y la Corte, que implique el establecimiento de algún mecanismo de seguimiento de aquellos casos referidos por el Consejo a la Corte Penal Internacional. Merci, Madame la Présidente.
Je remercie le représentant permanent de l'Uruguay et je donne maintenant la parole à la représentante de la République de Corée.
Madam President, at the outset, my delegation would like to express its sincere appreciation to the President of the International Criminal Court, Judge Sang Hyun Song, for his prominent leadership as well as his comprehensive report on the current activities of the Court. My delegation also commends the joint efforts by the Chambers, the Office of the Prosecutor, and the Registry, which have laid solid foundations for the effective functioning of the Court. We also take this opportunity to welcome the solemn undertakings of the new Registrar and Deputy Prosecutor. Madam President, so far, the Court has demonstrated notable achievements with its involvement in aid situations in Uganda, the Democratic Republic of the Congo, the Central African Republic, Kenya, Cote d'Ivoire, Sudan, Libya, and Mali, respectively. We note that the caseload of the chambers has increased significantly in the past year. The trial chamber issued its first judgment of acquittal regarding the situation in the DRC last December. The pre-trial chamber also issued very contrasting decisions on Libya's admissibility challenges on two cases. We expect that these examples, when their screening procedure of the appeals chamber is completed, will be contributable to precise interpretation of the principle of complementarity and the related articles of the Rome Statutes. Regarding the situation in Kenya, we wish to note the case of Mr. Ruto and Mr. Sang is now at the ongoing trial stage, in which the accused are present before the judges without any arrest. the recent judgment on the decision on the excusal from continuous presence of the accused at trial made by the appeals chamber last week will be a valuable precedent to help international criminal lawyers understand the legal logic of the Article 63 of the statute. Madam President, the Office of the Prosecutor has devoted itself to undertaking its duties in spite of an increased workload in the past year. We wish to note with appreciation that there has been progress on the case of Mr. Abdallah Banda despite difficulties of the situation in Darfur. We also expect the prosecutor will keep on doing her best in the prosecution of Mr. Laurent Gbagbo in Cote d'Ivoire. Among others, we take particular note that the prosecutor has succeeded in detaining Mr. Bosco Ntaganda, who is the first indictee subject to an ICC arrest warrant, to surrender at his own will to the custody of the court. My delegation would like to deliver our special appreciation to the countries contributing in transferring him to Hague. We believe that this case effectively shows that ICC is now firmly establishing itself and widely respected as the core institution bringing justice for the most heinous crimes taking place throughout the world. Madam President, we may recall that during our debate over the draft of the Rome Statute in the 20th century, not all of us share the same view toward the establishment of a permanent court to pursue international criminal justice. Since the entry into force in 2002, however, the number of the state parties to the Rome Statute has steadily grown to 122. During the past year, Cote d'Ivoire has joined as a new member of state parties to the statute. These steps taken have moved us closer toward universality and simultaneously promote the overall integrity of the ICC. Madam President, despite the court's remarkable achievements and its constructive role in strengthening the tribunal system, however, there is still a lot more to do in order to accomplish its mandate. In addition, these goals cannot be achieved completely by the sole efforts of the ICC alone. Indeed, it is also crucial to enhance the international community's ongoing endeavors in the pursuit of justice, the rule of law, and sustainable peace. Building upon the existing agreement between the United Nations and the ICC, we cannot overemphasize that it's absolutely vital for the two organizations to strengthen their relationship further. Furthermore, it is also critical for the court to garner ample support and cooperation from all member states of the UN. Without their full cooperation, for instance, the ICC cannot execute the outstanding arrest warrants for perpetrators of grave crimes, nor conduct thorough investigations for the appropriate prosecutions. The International Criminal Court was established in order to embody the principles of the Rome Statute to end impunity and contribute to prevent grave crimes such as the crime of genocide, war crimes, and crimes against humanity. To fulfill its mandate fully, the ICC should be respected as a non-political, independent, and judicial institution by all stakeholders as well as by state parties to the Rome Statute. By so doing, we can expect the ICC to continue to pursue criminal accountability against the most serious crimes of international concern, and thus to keep making a positive contribution to laying a solid foundation for a sustainable peace for the future. In closing, my delegation strongly believes that it's in the interest of humanity as a whole to uphold the principle of the rule of law by promoting the functions and work of the ICC. The Republic of Korea will always remain to be one of the strongest supporters of the Rome Statute and the ICC, and will continue working tirelessly to attain this common goal of the international community. I thank you, Madam President.
Je remercie la représentante de la République de Corée et je donne maintenant la parole au représentant du Chili.
Señora Presidenta, expresamos en primer término nuestro reconocimiento al presidente de la Corte Penal Internacional, Honorable Juez Sang Yun Song, por el completo informe que nos ha presentado, correspondiente al periodo comprendido entre el 1 de agosto de 2012 y el 31 de julio de 2013, que da cuenta, entre otras cosas, de las investigaciones que lleva actualmente en curso y que refleja el incremento de las actividades de la Corte. Saludamos asimismo en esta oportunidad a los nuevos secretarios y fiscal adjunto de la Corte. Señora Presidenta, las altas responsabilidades de la Corte Penal Internacional y su labor ciertamente merecen ser puestas de relieve ante la comunidad internacional. Para Chile, la Corte Penal Internacional se ha constituido en la expresión más avanzada del desarrollo de la justicia penal internacional y representa una de las iniciativas de más relevancia en este ámbito en los últimos tiempos. Desde el punto de vista de la protección de los derechos humanos, la creación de la Corte Penal es claramente un gran avance en la lucha contra la impunidad y una clara muestra de que sus Estados partes tienen un compromiso con la comunidad internacional para avanzar en este camino. Por lo anterior, Chile apoya firmemente el trabajo de la Corte Penal Internacional. Señora Presidenta, en el pasado periodo de sesiones tuvimos la oportunidad de celebrar el 10º aniversario de entrada en vigencia del Estatuto de Roma. Habiendo la Corte Penal entrado en su segunda década de funcionamiento, ella debe continuar consolidándose como Tribunal Penal Internacional de carácter independiente, hasta alcanzar un carácter universal. En este sentido, saludamos el ingreso de Costa de Marfil como nuevo Estado parte del Estatuto de Roma, constituyéndose de esa manera en el Estado número 122 de este Tratado Internacional. Señora Presidenta, estamos convencidos que la adecuada relación entre la Corte Penal Internacional y las Naciones Unidas, a través de sus órganos principales, la Asamblea General y el Consejo de Seguridad, es vital para el cumplimiento de las funciones de este Tribunal Penal Internacional. Ello contribuye, en último término, a fortalecer la promoción del Estado de Derecho, el respeto a los derechos humanos, la lucha contra la impunidad y, en consecuencia, a alcanzar la paz y seguridad internacionales de conformidad con el derecho internacional y los propósitos y principios de la Carta de las Naciones Unidas y el Estatuto de Roma. Saludamos, en este sentido, la cooperación que existe entre las Naciones Unidas y la Corte Penal Internacional, que se refleja, entre otras cosas, en el informe entregado por el presidente de la Corte a esta Asamblea y los reportes de la Fiscalía al Consejo de Seguridad respecto a las situaciones remitidas por este órgano. En este punto, es vital la existencia de la Oficina de Enlace de la Corte Penal Internacional en Nueva York para promover la cooperación y representar a la Corte en distintas reuniones, siguiendo los acontecimientos de relevancia para ella. Aprovechamos esta oportunidad para reiterar que la vinculación que existe entre el Consejo de Seguridad y la Corte Penal Internacional, específicamente en las facultades del primero para remitir situaciones o suspender investigaciones, de conformidad con los artículos 13 y 16 del Estatuto de Roma, es necesario que ella opere sobre la base de parámetros consistentes que demuestren que esas decisiones no son arbitrarias. Chile, en su calidad de nuevo miembro del Consejo de Seguridad, instará por lo anterior. Asimismo, estamos convencidos que es necesario que el Consejo de Seguridad, además de respaldar sus decisiones en esta materia mediante la creación de esos parámetros, y sin que ello implique interferencia en las actividades de la Corte, debe dar un seguimiento a sus remisiones. Igualmente, con respecto a esas remisiones, debe prestar especial atención frente a la negativa de los Estados a cooperar con la Corte. Por último, sería adecuado también que cuando el Consejo de Seguridad efectúe una revisión a la Corte Penal Internacional, la Asamblea General evalúe adoptar las providencias del caso para que la Corte cuente con los medios financieros para hacer frente a esas revisiones. Reiteramos en este sentido que es importante para que en el cumplimiento de su mandato la Corte cuente con los medios y recursos materiales y humanos necesarios, acordes con su quehacer judicial y las altas funciones que debe asumir. Señora Presidenta, el principio de la complementariedad es piedra angular del Estatuto de Roma, en virtud del cual recae sobre los tribunales nacionales la obligación primordial de investigar, enjuiciar y castigar a los culpables de los delitos más graves de trascendencia internacional establecidos en el Estatuto de Roma. La Corte Penal solo debe ser llamada a intervenir en los casos en que los estados en que se han cometido crímenes de su competencia no están en condiciones o no tienen la voluntad de llevar adelante los respectivos procedimientos judiciales. En este sentido, creemos que resulta fundamental para el trabajo de la Corte Penal la tipificación en el plano interno de los delitos establecidos en el Estatuto de Roma. Asimismo, es vital la cooperación de los estados con la misma. Por lo anterior, mi país tiene avanzado los trabajos para legislar en esta última materia, en concordancia con la promesa efectuada en el marco de la reunión de alto nivel sobre el Estado de Derecho en los planos nacional e internacional, que tuvo lugar el día 24 de septiembre del año pasado. Señora Presidenta, hacemos un llamado a los estados que aún no lo han hecho a que se hagan parte en el Estatuto de Roma para así lograr la universalidad del mismo. Asimismo, hacemos un llamado también a que los estados partes aprueben las enmiendas al Estatuto de Roma aprobadas en Kampala en el año 2010, haciendo presente que nuestro país se encuentra trabajando para lograr dicho objetivo. Señor Presidente de la Corte Penal Internacional, es oportuno reiterar una vez más el aprecio a la meritoria labor de la Corte, presidida por usted, así como su invaluable contribución en la lucha contra la impunidad. Muchas gracias, señora Presidenta.
Je remercie le représentant du Chili et je donne maintenant la parole au représentant de la Suisse.
Madame la Présidente, nous tous ici rassemblés, sommes animés par les mêmes valeurs, par le même souci de rendre justice aux victimes et de mettre fin à l'impunité pour les crimes les plus graves. Les 20 années qui se sont écoulées depuis que la justice pénale internationale est entrée dans l'ère moderne démontrent amplement combien il est difficile de traduire ces valeurs dans la réalité. C'est difficile parce que le travail doit souvent se faire dans des situations de conflit ou de fragilité post-conflictuelle, parce qu'il relève d'un défi bien plus large, celui d'instaurer ou de rétablir l'état de droit, et parce qu'il ne suffit pas de condamner les auteurs de crimes pour répondre aux besoins essentiels des victimes. C'est difficile aussi parce que nous ne sommes pas toujours d'accord sur la manière de nous acquitter de cette mission apparemment impossible. Les différentes attentes à l'égard de la justice pénale internationale se sont exprimées avec plus de force ces derniers temps. La Suisse a été à l'écoute, surtout des préoccupations formulées par certains États africains. Mais nous reconnaissons aujourd'hui que nous aurions pu en faire davantage pour nouer un dialogue avec ceux qui nous ont fait part de leurs préoccupations. Nous tenons donc à souligner que nous sommes disposés à discuter ouvertement des défis auxquels font face tant les États parties que la CPI. il y a 5 semaines, sur l'initiative de la Suisse, 24 ministres de toutes les régions du monde ont adopté une déclaration de soutien à la CPI. Ils ont affirmé, en particulier, être prêts à engager un dialogue en vue de régler les questions en suspens qui affectent le rôle de la Cour dans la lutte contre l'impunité. Cette offre est sérieuse et sincère. Madame la Présidente, la Suisse est favorable à la tenue d'une discussion constructive sur le fonctionnement du système du statut de Rome dans cette enceinte, dans le cadre d'échanges bilatéraux et lors de la prochaine session de l'Assemblée des États partis à La Haye. Ce dialogue serait fondé sur les valeurs déjà évoquées que nous partageons. 122 États partis, dont 34 Africains, ont adhéré volontairement au statut de Rome dans cette interprétation commune. Il était entendu notamment que l'indépendance de la Cour et la non-pertinence de la qualité officielle des accusés sont absolument essentielles à la crédibilité et au bon fonctionnement de la Cour. Les États étaient prêts à lui conférer ses droits car, selon le principe de complémentarité, la décision de mener des procédures au niveau national continue à relever de la souveraineté de chaque État. Madame la Présidente, aucune procédure nationale véritable n'a été ouverte en Syrie en dépit de tous les crimes graves qui y sont commis. La Suisse et 57 autres États ont adressé une lettre au Conseil de sécurité demandant la saisine de la CPI. À la suite de l'utilisation d'armes chimiques en Syrie, une telle mesure est plus que jamais nécessaire. C'est pourquoi nous réitérons notre appel aux États de toutes les régions du monde pour qu'ils se joignent à nous pour demander que des comptes soient rendus en Syrie. Bien que la saisine ne fasse pas consensus actuellement, la question de la redevabilité ne saurait être éludée. Il est essentiel de s'attaquer sans réserve à cette question dans le cadre des prochaines discussions de Genève sur la Syrie, si l'on veut que ce pays connaisse un jour une paix durable. Madame la Présidente, pour en venir maintenant aux relations entre la CPI et les Nations Unies, ma délégation tient à saluer la publication d'une version révisée des directives concernant les rapports entre fonctionnaires des Nations Unies et personne objet d'un mandat d'arrêt ou d'une citation à comparaître devant la Cour. Nous encourageons le secrétariat à appliquer strictement ces directives et à maintenir la pratique louable consistant à informer le président de l'Assemblée des États partis et le procureur de la CPI de ses contacts pertinents. Il ne peut y avoir de CPI forte sans le soutien des Nations Unies. Sans le soutien aussi de l'ensemble de son personnel qui permet à la Cour de traiter un nombre toujours croissant d'affaires. Nous saisissons cette occasion pour exprimer notre gratitude à toutes ces personnes pour le dur travail qu'elles accomplissent. Madame la Présidente, nous espérons sincèrement que nous continuerons à œuvrer tous ensemble pour traduire dans la réalité les valeurs que nous partageons, pour rendre justice aux victimes et mettre fin à l'impunité pour les crimes les plus graves. Madame la Présidente, je vous remercie.
Je remercie le représentant de la Suisse et je donne maintenant la parole au représentant permanent des Pays-Bas.
Thank you, Madam President. Representing the host country to the International Criminal Court and as facilitator of last year's resolution on the report of the ICC, I would like to thank the President of the ICC, Judge Sang Yun-sung, for presenting the UNGA with the 9th annual report of the International Criminal Court and for his personal efforts to safeguard the integrity and independence of the court. This annual report to the United Nations and this very debate we are having today in the GA highlight the important role the court plays in our common efforts to build an international community which is characterized by the rule of law and by respect for human rights, an international community in which there is no place for impunity. As we see time and time again, sustainable peace and security cannot be achieved if perpetrators of the most serious crimes are not brought to justice. In order to ensure the court's success in fighting impunity for the most heinous crimes of international concern, we, as an international community, must all work together. All states have a duty to investigate and prosecute suspects of these crimes, both nationally and internationally. And universal adherence to the Rome Statute of the International Criminal Court thus remains crucial. My country, like many others, are therefore pleased to welcome Cote d'Ivoire's ratification of the Rome Statute, bringing the total number of states that have ratified or acceded to the Rome Statute to 122, and it is our sincere hope that many more countries will join in the near future. And we also call on all states' parties to ratify the Kampala amendments on the crime of aggression swiftly. Cooperation and assistance provided by states' parties, non-states' parties, the UN, as well as other international and regional organizations is important for the court to function well. And this is especially true with regard to the arrest and surrender of suspects, the provision of evidence, the protection and relocation of victims and witnesses, and the enforcement of sentences. As representative bodies of the international community, the UN and its Security Council have an especially important role to play in supporting the work of the court. In this regard, the Netherlands welcomes the constructive and increased cooperation between the Security Council and the court over the last decade. And the Security Council, in particular, has a responsibility to provide political and financial support to its referrals of situations to the court. The Netherlands therefore calls upon the Security Council to remain actively engaged in the situations it refers to the court. The Netherlands is also in favor of referring the situation in Syria to the ICC, and we regret the continuing disagreement on this issue within the Security Council. A great number of member states signed a letter urging the Security Council to take its responsibility in this matter. Since then, a chemical weapons attack against civilians has taken place in Syria. The crimes committed must and cannot go unpunished, and we remain convinced that a referral is appropriate in the absence of alternatives. African states have greatly contributed to the creation of the Rome Statute, and their continuing support for the ICC does remain important. It is crucial that the concerns regarding the ICC, as voiced at the last AU summit, are addressed at the upcoming Assembly of State Parties through open, constructive dialogue. In The Hague, just last month, my country organized a retreat for which all ICC states' parties were invited. Main topic of discussion was improving the relationship between the ICC and several countries from the African region in order to promote and sustain dialogue between all states' parties. This dialogue should address all valid concerns. This includes those of the victims and their communities, of course. The Trust Fund for Victims, Madam President, is increasingly important in supporting both communities and individual victims of international crimes, including children and victims of sexual violence. We call on all states to continue their voluntary contributions to this important tool for compensation in the future. Both the court's workload and the expectations it must meet are high. This year, the court has made important institutional progress. Steps must be taken to further enhance the efficiency of the court, both by the court and by its states' parties. As focal point of the study group on governance, we will present several concrete constructive suggestions during the upcoming Assembly of States Parties. Madam President, it is important to stress here that fighting impunity for the crime of genocide, crimes against humanity, and war crimes is a responsibility shared by all UN member states, and not just the states' parties to the ICC. Only if states are not willing or able to fulfill their obligations themselves, then do we look to the court to step in. And this has been the case. either through referral or self-referral in the situations the court currently has under investigation. We must therefore strengthen the principles of complementarity and enhance states' capacities to domestically investigate and prosecute the most serious crimes of international concern. That indeed will strengthen complementarity. Together with Argentina, Belgium, Slovenia, the Netherlands have an ever-increasing number of like-minded states are advocating a negotiation with all UN member states on a multilateral treaty. This treaty should fill the gaps in the international legal framework for extradition and mutual legal assistance for the crime of genocide, crimes against humanity, and war crimes. And we invite all of you present here today to join us in these efforts to promote interstate cooperation in the domestic investigation and domestic prosecution of these crimes. Madam President, at the end of the day, the ICC remains the leading international institution in the fight against impunity for the gravest crimes. The report presented here today by President Song shows the court is working very hard to meet the international community's high expectations for it to deliver justice, not in the last place, to the myriads of victims of these crimes around the world. We commend the court for its efforts in improving efficiency and enhancing investigative capacities. In order for the court to continue to bring justice to victims of the most heinous of crimes worldwide, we cannot stress enough the importance of its independent judicial role. We as states have a responsibility to support it and to keep it free from political considerations. In closing, we cannot and must not underestimate the positive impact the court has had in its first decades of its existence. It has contributed greatly to the fight against impunity, making our time the age of accountability. And as my Minister of Foreign Affairs, Frans Timmermans, said last year at the 10-year anniversary of the ICC in The Hague, in the Hall of Knights, he said, "Prevention, protection, and prosecution are closely linked." And if the ICC really fulfills its mission, its efforts will and do contribute to prevention of the most heinous crimes, leading to additional protection of civilians. And it's up to all of us here, Madam President, to ensure that the ICC can continue to fulfill its mission. Thank you very much, Madam President.
Je remercie le représentant permanent des Pays-Bas et je donne maintenant la parole au représentant de la Namibie.
Thank you, Madam President. Madam President, my delegation welcomes the latest report of the International Criminal Court submitted to the United Nations General Assembly and wish to welcome the President of the Court, Judge San Yong Song, and also thank him for presenting an in-depth report on the latest engagements of the Court. The establishment of the Court signifies the foundation of the principal forum of international criminal justice. As the number of state parties continues to increase, we are making good progress in realizing the full implementation of and the universal participation of the Rome Statute In this regard, we welcome the recent ratification of the Rome Statute by the government of Cote d'Ivoire, bringing the total number of African states parties to the Rome Statute to 35 and a total number of 122 for the totality of states parties. This is a significant achievement. Madam President, our debate on the report of the ICC demonstrates the role of the court in our common efforts to build an international community characterized by the rule of law and respect for human rights, and a commitment to global peace and security. My delegation reaffirms that for the achievement of sustainable peace, there should be no impunity for the perpetrators of most heinous crimes. Therefore, the ICC's complementary role in deterring and prosecuting such crimes cannot be overstated. The court is intended to be a court of last resort in the exercise of jurisdiction over the crimes within the jurisdiction of the court. State parties have the primary responsibility to facilitate the legal and technical capacity of their domestic institutions to investigate and adjudicate international crimes without reference to international criminal court. We welcome the court's efforts to promote the adoption of implementing legislation and the review of domestic laws to facilitate different forms of cooperation with the court when it exercises complementary jurisdiction in respect of international crimes. An increase in the availability of domestic avenues for the prosecution of international crimes will not only reduce the number of cases coming before the court, but will immensely contribute to the suppression of international crimes as mandated by the Rome Statute. State parties are therefore reminded of their responsibilities to investigate and try international crimes in their domestic jurisdictions. Madam President, cooperation of state parties with the court is critical to the effectiveness and credibility of the court. Article 86 imposes an obligation on state parties to cooperate fully with the court in its investigation and prosecution of crimes within the jurisdiction of the court. The extent to which states render cooperation to the court as envisaged in Article 86 and other forms of cooperation in Part 9 of the Rome Statute depend on the manner in which the court came to assume the jurisdiction in situation in questions. Where referrals have been made by the state parties, cooperation from such states have invariably been forthcoming. This has largely been demonstrated in the cooperation of states such as the DRC, the Central African Republic, and Uganda, and Kenya, which has resulted in the surrender of suspects to the court. However, with regard to the referrals by the Security Council, state cooperation in effecting arrests mandated by the court pursuant to such referrals has largely not been forthcoming. Non-cooperation of some states has been informed by different considerations about the relative balance between the pursuit of justice and peacemaking efforts in conflict situations. In both the Darfur and Libyan situations, indictments were issued without adequate regard for the impact of such indictments on the prospects of ending the conflicts in those countries. The referrals in situations to the ICC by the Security Council has proven to be highly political and controversial, and also enjoy the lowest degree of state cooperation in the enforcement of court orders. Madam President, the history of the ICC's creation and the engaged involvement of African states demonstrates that the court was created for the benefit of victims of serious crimes around the world, in particular those in Africa. It is thus not surprising that African states parties constitute the biggest bloc in the membership of the court, which is a clear demonstration of the continent's commitment to the work of the court. It is therefore important to note that there are concerns raised by the African Union with regard to the indictment of sitting heads of states, which leads to several AU decisions on this matter. We therefore underline the need for greater understanding of the concerns raised by the AU, as they are genuine concerns that may impact on the prospects of peace and security on the continent. I thank you, Madam Chair.
Je remercie le représentant de la Namibie et je donne maintenant la parole à la représentante du Rwanda. Madame, vous avez la parole.
Madam President, I thank you for allowing me to give the views of Rwanda on this important topic. Rwanda values the importance of this meeting in which we are afforded the opportunity to consider whether the international criminal system in place has met the expectation of ensuring accountability. Regarding the ICC, Rwanda shares the views expressed by the African Union Extraordinary Summit of Heads of State held in Addis Ababa on 12 October 2013. Madam President, the rule of law is strengthened if there is no exception or double standard in the application of justice, including international justice. The ICC was meant to act independently of political interference. Unfortunately, its activities have not always lived up to this expectation. The ICC has rather been selective in its methods of investigating and prosecuting perpetrators of serious international crimes, in that it has so far failed to accept the glaring truth that similar crimes have been committed in other parts of the world with impunity. It is evident that political bias, control, and flawed methodology are being deployed in the name of international justice. Yet, the ICC proponents are ostensibly deaf to the increasingly vocal criticism against the cross bias towards Africa. Madam President, regarding the principle of complementarity, we are of the view that the ICC should be seen as a court of last resort. It should intervene only when concerned national courts are unable or unwilling to try cases committed on their own territory. Rwanda believes that the Republic of Kenya is able and willing to prosecute all cases related to the 2007 post-elected violence, including cases of its president and vice president. Rwanda expresses the concern that the trial of Kenyan leaders outside their country would undermine the sovereignty, stability, and peace in that country and in all neighboring states, as well as the reconciliation that and the reconstruction and the normal functioning of constitutional institutions. Furthermore, Rwanda would like to underline the principle deriving from national laws and customary international law that heads of state and other state senior officials are granted immunities during their tenure in office. The immunities of sitting heads of states were also recognized by the International Court of Justice. Madam President, Rwanda believes in justice and in international justice, but my country is of the view that the search for justice should be pursued in a way that does not impede or jeopardize efforts aimed at promoting lasting peace. That is why, in the aftermath of the 1994 genocide against the Tutsis in Rwanda, Rwanda put in place a restorative justice through Gacaca courts, which allowed at the same time truth, justice, and reconciliation. The result is that, despite the genocide that took lives of more than 1 million people in 19 years ago, the social fabric has been rebuilt and Rwandan live together peacefully. Madam President, in conclusion, let me point out that one can rightly say that international criminal justice is in a crisis of credibility. Hence the need to review what we have achieved over the last decades and chart the way forward. The key principle enshrined in the UN Charter, notably the sovereign equality of states, requires that all peoples of the UN family, mighty and weak, rich and poor, white, yellow, or black, men or women, be treated equally. We do not wish that this noble principle be deformed into a process in which the mighty must sit in judgment of the weaker, even when the mighty is the one guilty of a crime against the weaker. I thank you, Madam President.
Je remercie la représentante du Rwanda et je donne maintenant la parole au représentant de la République démocratique du Congo.
Madame la Présidente, ma délégation a pris acte du 9e rapport annuel de la Cour pénale internationale à l'Organisation des Nations Unies, document A-68-314, tel que présenté par le président de la Cour, le juge Song. Il en résulte que la charge de travail de la Cour continue d'augmenter, avec 8 situations au stade de l'enquête et 8 situations au stade de l'examen préliminaire, ainsi que des appels interjetés dans 2 affaires. Madame la Présidente, il est important de rappeler que la situation en République démocratique du Congo a été déférée à la Cour pénale internationale par la volonté des autorités agissant au nom des populations meurtries d'un pays en situation post-conflit où s'est déroulé ce que certains ont pu appeler avec raison la Première Guerre mondiale africaine. La Cour pénale internationale a été justement créée pour prendre en charge ce type de situation. C'est pourquoi la formulation du statut de Rome, qui relève d'une simple théorie pour certains, demeure une réalité palpable que les populations congolaises, particulièrement celles de la partie orientale du pays, vivent au quotidien. À ce sujet, il convient de rappeler que le mouvement du 23 mars, une bande de forces négatives à la solde des intérêts étrangers, a été créé pour entraver l'arrestation de M. Bosco Ntaganda, responsable de crimes de guerre et crimes contre l'humanité, massacres, assassinats, viols, enrôlement d'enfants, etc., qui lui avait valu un mandat d'arrêt de la Cour pénale internationale. La suite est bien connue. La République démocratique du Congo est restée ferme et a payé un lourd tribut dans ce difficile combat contre l'impunité. Dans la même logique, la récente découverte de 2 fosses communes à Kibumba, à l'est de la République démocratique du Congo, où manifestement les forces négatives du M23 exécutaient leurs victimes, y compris des enfants, devrait rapidement donner lieu à une enquête de la Cour pénale internationale. Par ailleurs, les dirigeants de ce mouvement terroriste, qui figurent depuis longtemps sur les listes actualisées des personnes visées par les sanctions de l'ONU, de l'Union européenne et du gouvernement américain, bien que protégés par les pays voisins où ils ont trouvé refuge, doivent savoir qu'il n'y aura pas d'impunité. Ils devront répondre de leurs actes devant la justice. Nous invitons les pays qui les hébergent à coopérer à leur arrestation et à leur transfert devant les instances judiciaires compétentes. Madame la Présidente, les guerres et toutes ces formes de violence qui dénient la dignité et le caractère sacré de l'être humain n'ont pas de nationalité. Cette réalité que d'aucuns veulent confiner à la seule République démocratique du Congo pour se soustraire à leurs obligations et responsabilités est intolérable et inacceptable. Elle nous concerne tous et la coopération avec la Cour pénale internationale doit en constituer le socle. Au point de vue de la coopération, justement, nous ne cesserons pas de le dire. La République démocratique du Congo est le tout premier État parti à avoir développé une coopération significative avec la Cour pénale internationale. Les actes de coopération posés par mon pays en font certainement un modèle de coopération avec la Cour pénale internationale et plusieurs instruments juridiques l'attestent. La RDC n'a pas attendu l'entrée en vigueur du statut de Rome pour le ratifier. Elle l'a ratifié le 30 mars 2002, soit plus d'un trimestre avant l'entrée en vigueur de ce traité. La RDC a d'initiative déféré sa situation devant la Cour pénale internationale dès le 3 mars 2004. Elle a signé un accord de coopération judiciaire avec la Cour le 6 octobre 2004. Elle a également conclu un accord d'assistance judiciaire avec la MONUC et la Cour pénale internationale. En rapport avec les procédures devant la Cour, la RDC a, à trois reprises, correctement exécuté des demandes d'arrestation émanant de la Cour pénale internationale concernant ses ressortissants. Comme on peut bien le constater, la République démocratique du Congo est convaincue que la paix et la justice sont complémentaires. Elle a expérimenté le rôle irremplaçable de la justice comme facteur de concorde sociale, de réconciliation nationale, de paix, de sécurité et de stabilité. Madame la Présidente, le rapport annuel de la Cour pénale internationale à l'Organisation des Nations Unies, document A/68/314, dont cette plénière est saisie, souligne l'importance grandissante des travaux de la Cour et du statut de Rome sur la scène internationale. Il fait état des avancées très significatives dans l'œuvre de la Cour avec le début de procès dans certaines situations, la confirmation des charges dans d'autres et l'ouverture de nouvelles enquêtes dans d'autres encore. Ces progrès dans la marche de la justice pénale internationale s'inscrivent dans un contexte de grands défis auxquels la Cour doit faire face et dont le plus important reste la non-coopération. Il sied de reconnaître à ce sujet la réalité du changement de la perception de la Cour, même auprès de certains États qui avaient jusque-là fait preuve d'un grand soutien pour celle-ci. Il en est ainsi du sentiment d'injustice et des perceptions d'iniquité qui s'installe petit à petit dans la tête de certains Africains qui pensent que la justice internationale est devenue une sorte d'outil de pression sur les dirigeants africains. Il importe également que la Cour mette en place des mécanismes capables d'endiguer ce type de perception qui risque de saper la réputation de la Cour et compromettre son succès, même s'il demeure établi que plus de la moitié des États membres de l'Organisation universelle ont rejoint la Cour moins de 5 ans seulement après son entrée en fonction. Mais il importe tout autant que la Cour se penche sur son propre fonctionnement, réfléchisse sur sa manière de travailler et devienne plus professionnelle et moins politique, la politique et la justice ne faisant pas nécessairement bon ménage. Pour établir le climat de confiance qui se détériore encore entre la Cour et l'Union africaine, quelques pistes de solutions s'imposent notamment. Premièrement, l'intensification du dialogue déjà en cours entre l'Union africaine et la Cour pénale internationale en vue de raviver la coopération des États. Deuxièmement, la mise en œuvre intégrale du principe de la complémentarité dans les pays africains, sachant qu'il revient en premier lieu à chaque État d'enquêter et de poursuivre les crimes les plus graves ayant une portée internationale. Et troisièmement, la possibilité de tirer le meilleur bénéfice possible de l'initiative tendant à élargir le mandat de la Cour africaine des droits de l'homme et des peuples en vue d'inclure une compétence pénale pour juger les crimes internationaux. Pour clore ce chapitre, ma délégation voudrait souhaiter la bienvenue dans le club des États partis à la Côte d'Ivoire qui a récemment rejoint la Cour pénale internationale, portant le nombre des États partis à 122. Madame la Présidente, la conférence de révision qui s'est tenue à Kampala en Ouganda en mai et juin 2010 a été pour les États membres une occasion précieuse de confirmer les acquis de Rome et de renforcer la conviction que la Cour pénale internationale est un cadeau d'espoir pour les générations futures et une avancée très importante vers le respect des droits de l'homme et de l'état de droit. La déclaration de Kampala, dans laquelle les États ont réaffirmé leur volonté de promouvoir les statuts de Rome et sa pleine mise en œuvre, ainsi que son caractère universel, le bilan de la justice pénale internationale, la modification du statut de Rome qui comporte désormais une définition du crime d'agression et les conditions d'exercice par la Cour de sa compétence à l'égard de ce crime sont autant d'acquis au respect desquels nous devons tous veiller jalousement. Pour terminer, Madame la Présidente, et tout en réitérant la volonté de ma délégation de veiller au respect de l'intégrité du statut de la Cour, je voudrais, une fois de plus, inviter les États qui ne l'ont pas encore fait à rejoindre le mécanisme de la Cour pénale internationale afin qu'ensemble, nous puissions contribuer à l'universalisation de la lutte contre l'impunité. Je vous remercie.
Je remercie le représentant de la République démocratique du Congo et je donne maintenant la parole au représentant du Japon.
Madam President, at the outset, I would like to thank President Sang Hyun-sung for his comprehensive report on the work of the International Criminal Court. As my delegation has said on many occasions, Japan attaches great importance to the central role of the ICC in enhancing the rule of law at the national and international levels. It only needs to be said once that the ICC plays a key role in the maintenance of international peace and security through achieving justice and preventing grave crimes and violations of international humanitarian and human rights law. The ICC has enjoyed its highly respected credibility throughout the world. 122 states are now parties to the Rome Statute. Japan would like to extend a warm welcome to Côte d'Ivoire for joining the states parties to the statute in February 2013. As a leading supporter of the court in the Asian Pacific region, which is as of now the most underrepresented region in the assembly of states parties, Japan renews its commitment to continue encouraging our Asia Pacific friends, which have not yet done so, to ratify or accede to the statute by providing its assistance for the development of legal systems and human resources. Madam President, we all know that the court has been playing a remarkable role in putting an end to impunity against the most serious crimes such as genocide, crime against humanity, and war crimes. However, it must be also acknowledged that the purpose of the court cannot be achieved by the court alone. In this regard, allow me to commend the tireless efforts by Her Excellency Ambassador Tina Intermann, President of the Assembly of States Parties to the Rome Statute, in addressing the non-cooperation issue by listening carefully to the concerns of the relevant state parties. Difficulties we are now facing in this context must be overcome in order to advance the cause of the rule of law. As a focal point for non-cooperation for the Asia-Pacific group in the Bureau, Japan continues to underline the importance of cooperating with the court in terms of execution of the mandate given by the Rome Statute. Mutual cooperation between the ICC and the United Nations is crucial as well. This is particularly relevant with regard to cases referred by the Security Council. Cooperation strengthens the court's credibility by meeting the expectation of the victims and the international community. It cannot be overemphasized that key priorities of international criminal justice have to serve the people who suffered most from grave crimes and to ensure that those victims and affected communities within the jurisdiction of the court are supported. In this regard, Japan commends the praiseworthy work of the Trust Fund for Victims at the ICC for the benefit of victims and their families, under the leadership of the chair of the board of directors of the TFV, Mr. Moto Noguchi. In conclusion, Madam President, Japan remains deeply committed to providing the ICC its unwavering support, fostering an ICC which will be even more efficient, effective, universal, and systematically sustainable, and contributing to our common goal of ensuring that perpetrators of the most serious crimes be held accountable. I thank you, Madam President.
Je remercie le représentant du Japon et je donne maintenant la parole au représentant de la Fédération de Russie.
Госпожа председатель, мы внимательно ознакомились с очередным докладом МУС и признательны председателю Международного уголовного суда за его подготовку. Наша страна твердо привержена борьбе с безнаказанностью за наиболее тяжкие преступления по международному праву, вызывающие озабоченность всего международного сообщества. В этой связи мы придаем большое значение деятельности МУС. Как следует из доклада суда, ключевой проблемой его функционирования – остается ненадлежащее исполнение государствами ордеров на арест. По мнению руководства МУС, основным негативным фактором, способствующим этому, является низкий уровень сотрудничества государств с судом. Мы по-прежнему считаем, что дело здесь не только в государствах и их нежелании сотрудничать с МУС. Упомянутые проблемы носят скорее системный характер. Их истоки по большей части кроются в самом Римском статуте, к сожалению, не являющимся по-настоящему компромиссным документом. Речь идет и о неадекватном отражении прерогатив Совета Безопасности в этом документе, и о проблемах с толкованием положений статута, касающихся иммунитетов высших должностных лиц государств. Как следствие, суд часто, и на наш взгляд не без оснований, упрекают в региональных перекосах, недостаточном учете страновой специфики. Подтверждением этому являются и те озабоченности, которые были высказаны недавно государствами Африканского Союза. В контексте МУС для нас остается важным вопрос о недавно включенном в его статут преступлении агрессии. Нас беспокоит то обстоятельство, что Кампальский компромисс не учитывает в полной мере уставные прерогативы Совета Безопасности. Мы считаем крайне нежелательным возникновение ситуации, когда суд осуществлял бы юрисдикцию в отношении преступления агрессии в отсутствие соответствующего определения со стороны Совета Безопасности. Имеются и определенные проблемы с механизмом вступления в силу Кампальских поправок по агрессии, которые, на наш взгляд, могут стать источником проблем правоприменительного характера в будущей работе МУС. Мы надеемся, что МУС с достоинством преодолеет возникающие перед ним вызовы и сможет эффективно и непредвзято выполнять свой мандат. Ведь именно от того, как он справится с этой задачей, в конечном счете зависит, станет ли он подлинно универсальным органом международного уголовного правосудия. Благодарю вас.
Je remercie le représentant de la Fédération de Russie et je donne maintenant la parole au représentant permanent du Costa Rica.
Muchas gracias, señora presidenta. Costa Rica agradece al juez Song la presentación del noveno informe de la Corte Penal Internacional en cumplimiento del artículo sexto del Acuerdo de Relación entre las Naciones Unidas y la Corte. Destacamos especialmente su claro y detallado recuento de la situación respecto a los más importantes acontecimientos judiciales y procesales que enfrenta la institución. Damos la bienvenida al jurista James Stewart como fiscal adjunto, así como la elección de Herman von Hebel como secretario de la Corte. Costa Rica ve con satisfacción el aumento en el número de estados parte del Estatuto de Roma y celebra su ratificación por Costa de Marfil en febrero del presente año, lo cual eleva el número de partes a 122. Mi país se compromete a continuar trabajando en pro de la universalización y la integridad del Estatuto y por la entrada en vigencia de la jurisdicción de la Corte sobre todos los delitos incluidos en dicho Estatuto. En este sentido, deseamos agradecer el trabajo realizado por la representación de Rumanía en el Grupo de Trabajo sobre Universalización del Estatuto de Roma, así como los encomiables esfuerzos de la delegación de Liechtenstein en pro de la ratificación de la enmienda referente al crimen de agresión. El proyecto de ley para la ratificación de las enmiendas al Estatuto de Roma adoptadas en Kampala en 2010 recibió el pasado agosto dictamen positivo en la Comisión de Asuntos Internacionales de la Asamblea Legislativa Costarricense. Falta la aprobación en plenario que esperamos se dé en los próximos meses. Mi país, además, ratificó desde 2011 el acuerdo de privilegios e inmunidades de la Corte. Celebramos también que el Grupo de Trabajo sobre el Mecanismo de Supervisión Independiente, facilitado por Costa Rica en La Haya, pudiera alcanzar el consenso que permitirá a este órgano subsidiario iniciar sus tareas de supervisión
de acuerdo con lo establecido por el artículo 122 del Estatuto de Roma. Señora Presidenta, nos causa gran preocupación la reiterada falta de cumplimiento de algunos Estados partes con las claras e irrenunciables responsabilidades que emanan del Estatuto de Roma. Es especialmente grave el hecho de que tal incumplimiento se refleje en la negativa a ejecutar órdenes de captura vigentes. Consideramos necesario que mantengamos presente, tal como recordó hoy el presidente Song, que los casos presentados ante la Corte tratan de los más graves delitos contra la humanidad y que sus víctimas, que son personas reales, no abstracciones jurídicas, merecen que los presuntos perpetradores rindan cuentas de sus actos. La historia nos enseña que no podrá haber paz duradera sin justicia. Otro asunto que merece toda nuestra atención es la situación financiera de la Corte. Si bien es cierto, enfrentamos una situación económica mundial difícil, no podemos permitir que por estrecheces presupuestarias se vean amenazadas las funciones de la Corte o, peor aún, su independencia. La acción de la Corte ha crecido sustancialmente como consecuencia de la seriedad de las violaciones a los derechos y a la dignidad humanas y del mayor reconocimiento a su jurisdicción. Su carga incluye 8 investigaciones, 8 investigaciones preliminares, 23 órdenes de arresto y 8 convocatorias. Más de 5.000 víctimas se encuentran participando en los procedimientos. Esto se refleja en sus costos de operación y en la ejecución de todos sus programas. Para el próximo año, la Corte realizó un ejercicio de racionalización de sus gastos y uso eficiente de sus recursos, lo cual ha resultado en un presupuesto sensato y transparente. Costa Rica no está de acuerdo con iniciativas que limiten la esfera o capacidad de acción de la Corte. Por este motivo, no apoyaremos ninguna propuesta de crecimiento cero en su presupuesto, y menos aún una que pretenda incluir bajo ese concepto el nuevo rubro relacionado con el pago del alquiler de su sede. Agradecemos al Reino de los Países Bajos por su ofrecimiento de cubrir el 50% de los costos de alquiler de las oficinas temporales de la Corte. Sin embargo, esto deja un saldo de 3 millones de euros que no deberían considerarse dentro de los cálculos sobre el próximo presupuesto operacional de la Corte. La fuerza motora de la Corte debe seguir siendo la búsqueda de la justicia, el cese de la impunidad de los peores crímenes y la atención a las víctimas, sin dejar de lado sus actividades de extensión e información. La calidad y cantidad de la atención a dichas funciones de la Corte no deben estar condicionadas a temas financieros. Señora Presidenta, ante los nuevos retos que enfrenta la Corte y que vemos como de naturaleza coyuntural, nos hacemos eco de las palabras del presidente Song y ratificamos nuestro criterio de que solo pueden y deben atenderse solicitudes de estados o de las partes en procesos que sean totalmente compatibles con el marco legal del Estatuto de Roma y con las competencias jurisdiccionales de sus órganos. La integridad jurídica de la Corte es su mayor valor y todos los estados tenemos el deber de respetarla y protegerla. Para concluir, señora Presidenta, Costa Rica se compromete a continuar apoyando la universalización, la independencia y la integridad de la Corte para que en conjunto con los demás estados parte, como lo establece el preámbulo del Estatuto de Roma, garanticemos el respeto y cumplimiento de la justicia internacional. Muchas gracias, señora Presidenta.
Je remercie le représentant permanent du Costa Rica et je donne maintenant la parole au représentant permanent du Soudan.
سيد الرئيس
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. ونحن نتداول اليوم حول هذا التقرير نؤمن بأن هذه المنظمة الدولية تسعى جاهدة لإعلاء قيم السلم والأمن الدوليين واحترام حقوق الإنسان، وتهتدي في ذلك بمبادئ نبيلة وحاكمة تضمنها الميثاق الذي أكد على أهمية المساواة بين الدول ومنع التدخل في شؤونها الداخلية. سيد الرئيس، إن الآمال التي انعقدت على هذه المنظمة ومبادئها أصبحت مهددة بسلوك بعض الدول التي ما زالت تتعامل بروح استعمارية وتفسر الميثاق حسب أجندتها ومصالحها، مما أضر بالعلاقات الدولية. نحن إذ نستعرض هذا التقرير اليوم لا بد من القول أن الممارسة الراهنة للمحكمة الجنائية الدولية ومكتب المدعي العام لها وتوجهاته السياسية مثل انحرافاً واضحاً لدور المحكمة منذ مراحلها الأولى. وفي هذا الإطار نود أن نذكر بما سبق التعبير عنه من تحفظات خلال التفاوض حول ميثاق روما بشأن دور المدعي العام. سيد الرئيس، إن قضية الإفلات من العقاب تظل هدف قانوني لا يختلف عليه اثنان، ومسؤولية تقع بصورة مباشرة على عاتق القانون القضاء والقانون الوطني. إن العلاقة بين مجلس الأمن والمحكمة الجنائية الدولية ظلت محل رفض لأنها رسخت منذ يومها الأول لتأثير جهاز سياسي على جهاز قضائي، وقد عبر عن ذلك العديد من الدول المشاركة في مؤتمر روما. ولأن تسييس العدالة مرفوض تظل هذه العلاقة بين مجلس الأمن والمحكمة الجنائية مرفوضة أيضاً. ما ذكرناه حول هذا الأمر تدلل عليه أيضاً وقائع اعتماد القرار رقم 1593 الذي أحال بموجبه مجلس الأمن الوضع في دارفور في بلادي للمحكمة الجنائية الدولية، وخير شاهد على ذلك عدم اهتمام القرار واعتماده بالإجماع في داخل مجلس الأمن. سيد الرئيس، لقد حذرنا العام الماضي أثناء مناقشة هذا البند من أن تصبح الأمم المتحدة سكرتارية لمكتب المدعي العام، وأن تمنح اتفاقية التعاون بين الأمم المتحدة والمحكمة الجنائية حقوقاً لا أساس لها ولا سند قانوني لها. ما أشار إليه التقرير بشأن المهام التي يطلع بها مسؤولي الأمم المتحدة وتعاملهم مع المحكمة الجنائية الدولية في تحركاتهم واتصالاتهم يؤكد ما ذهبنا إليه بأعلاه، إذ أنه يشكل خطورة على حياد وعمل مسؤولي الأمم المتحدة، حيث أن المحكمة أصبحت هي التي يحدد تحركات واتصالات أولئك المسؤولين. سيد الرئيس، إن الواقع الدولي وخاصة في القارة الأفريقية قد أثبت بما لا يدع مجالاً للشك تسييس المحكمة الجنائية لمفهوم العدالة، مما أدى إلى رفض متنام في القارة الأفريقية لمواقف المحكمة تجاه القادة الأفارقة، والذي بدأ بمطالبة الاتحاد الأفريقي لمجلس الأمن لتجميد الادعاء ضد فخامة الرئيس السوداني عمر حسن أحمد البشير، ومؤخرا تجميد الادعاء في حق الرئيس الكيني. كما أن القمة الاستثنائية الأخيرة للقادة الأفارقة استنكرت بشدة استهداف المحكمة للقادة الأفارقة، وأصدرت قرارا بعدم تعرضها لأي رئيس في سدة الحكم وعدم مثوله أمام أي محكمة أجنبية. سيد الرئيس، ننوه أيضا إلى أن عدد من القادة الأفارقة ورؤساء وفود وبينهم من هم أطراف في ميثاق روما قد عبروا عن القلق الذي ينتاب القارة الأفريقية والأثر السلبي على السلم والأمن في أفريقيا خلال مشاركتهم في اجتماعات الجمعية العامة في سبتمبر الماضي أثناء بند النقاش العام. اليوم وفي هذه اللحظة التي أخاطبكم فيها هنالك اجتماع ينعقد في بعثة الاتحاد المراقبة للاتحاد الأفريقي في نيويورك على بعد أمتار من هذا المكان. يخاطب ذلك الاجتماع 5 وزراء خارجية من دول أفريقية انتدبتهم القارة لمقابلة أعضاء مجلس الأمن ليسجلوا هذا الموقف الذي استعرضته قبل قليل، وهو أن المحكمة الجنائية أصبحت تستهدف القارة الأفريقية والرؤساء الأفارقة، وطالبوا المجلس بتجميد كل الادعاءات المرفوعة في حق الرؤساء الأفارقة. السودان يضم صوته قويا ويستنكر بشدة هذا الاتجاه من قبل المحكمة تجاه القادة الأفارقة. في الختام، لعلنا تابعنا أيضا وكلنا يعرف انتقائية وازدواجية معايير المحكمة، فكثير من الأحيان تغمض العين عن جرائم فظيعة ترتكب وارتكبت في مناطق عديدة خارج أفريقيا، مثل تلك الجرائم البشعة التي ارتكبت وما زالت ترتكب في حق الشعب الفلسطيني. أين العدالة الدولية؟ أين المحكمة الجنائية الدولية؟ أين هم الذين يتحدثون عن مساندة المحكمة الجنائية الدولية في مجلس الأمن؟ والشعب الفلسطيني يقتل وتنتهك حقوقه كل يوم. أختم بالقول أن الشواهد والممارسات السلبية التي ارتبطت بالمحكمة الجنائية منذ إنشائها تجعلنا ننادي اليوم أيضاً ومن هذا المنبر بضرورة مراجعة اتفاقية التعاون بين الأمم المتحدة وهذه المحكمة، بما يضمن سيادة واستغلال الأمم المتحدة عن هذا الجهاز المنشأ حديثا والذي لم يكتسب حتى الموافقة العالمية عليه. وشكرا سيد الرئيس.
Je remercie le représentant du Soudan et je donne maintenant la parole au représentant de la Chine.
Thank you, Madam President. 中国一贯重视国际刑事司法机构在促进国际法治、惩治最严重国际罪行方面发挥的作用，并始终以建设性态度积极参与国际刑事司法制度的建设。
中国支持建立一个独立、公正、有效且具有普遍性的国际刑事法院，并作为观察员国参加了历次缔约国大会。中方感谢联合国秘书长根据联合国和国际刑事法院关系协定第六条和大会第66、262号决议。 向大会提交的国际刑事法院报告及 ICC 宋湘宪院长所做的报告，并愿就联合国和 ICC 的关系及 ICC 有关工作提及以下看法：第一，关于联合国与 ICC 的关系问题，中方支持双方依据与联合国宪章。 安理会决议及联合国和国际刑事法院间关系协定相符的方式开展合作。联合国与 ICC 有着紧密联系，一方面作为 ICC 管辖权的启动机制之一，联合国具体通过安理会有权向 ICC 提交刑事；另一方面作为对 ICC 的干预机制， 若联合国安理会根据宪章第七章通过决议，向 ICC 提出要求，则 ICC 在其后的12个月内不得进行有关调查或起诉。这做法可以使顺延。中方认为，为使双方的合作有助于实现各自的职责与目标，联合国与 ICC 应在联合国宪章、安理会决议。 及联合国和国际刑事法院间关系协定确定的法律框架内开展合作，唯有如此，才能使得双方真正从彼此的合作中受益。第二，关于 ICC 执行补充管辖原则的问题，中方认为，随着 ICC 司法活动的全面展开，ICC 切实执行补充管辖原则的重要性。 日渐显现。根据补充管辖原则，在国际罪行的管辖和审判方面，一国国内法院应发挥首要作用。只有在一国不能或不愿管辖有关国际罪行时 ，ICC 才可作为对国内法院的补充，对案件行使管辖。然而，在实践中，有关个案。 究竟应由哪个法院管辖，是当事国法院还是国际刑事法院，各方容易产生矛盾。中方注意到，近来国际刑事法院有关部分非洲国家的案件，在这方面引发了较多的争议，引起当事国及一些非洲国家的不满和忧虑。中方对此高度关注。 中方主张，国际刑事法院应严守补充管辖原则，充分尊重有关国家法院审理案件的需求和意愿，积极考虑有关地区组织的合理要求，并通过其行动协助加强国家能力建设，以促进有关国家对个案的有效管理。 第三，中方重申，我们支持国际社会惩治严重国际罪行，促进实现司法正义的努力，同时希望国际刑事法院确保其维护司法正义的努力有利于促进和平，避免影响有关国家或地区局势和政治解决进程，使其工作真正服务于。 当地人民的福祉。中方将继续关注 ICC 的工作，并希望其通过实践赢得更广泛的信任和支持。最后，中国代表团感谢宋湘宪院长今天上午及时向大会通报关于肯尼亚总统肯雅塔案件的最新进展。 ICC 今天上午决定推迟审理该案，中方对此表示欢迎。中方认为，肯尼亚和非洲联盟的合理关切应得到充分的重视。中方将持续关注有关案件的进展。谢谢主席女士。
Je remercie le représentant de la Chine et je donne maintenant la parole au représentant du Kenya. Vous avez la parole.
Thank you, Madam President. Madam President, we appreciate the report of the International Criminal Court.Contained in Document A/68/314, which provides useful insights to the activities of the court for the year under review. The state parties to the Rome Statute established an independent, permanent international criminal court with authority over the most serious crimes that threaten peace and security. This court, being complementary to national criminal jurisdictions, ensures that effective prosecution.Measures are taken at the national level with enhanced international cooperation and, where necessary, capacity strengthening. The preamble of the Rome Statute, while recognizing the primacy of the national criminal jurisdictions, recalls that it is the duty of every state to exercise its criminal jurisdiction over the perpetrators of serious crimes. We note that the report refers to, and rightfully so,the fact that public and diplomatic support for the mandate of the court further contributes to its effective functioning, and further, that the court requires timely and full support from state parties in order to assist and support the court in its activities. While we agree with these sentiments, we hasten to add that the cooperation referred to herein is and should be a two-way process.That requires the court to extend its cooperation, considerations, accommodation, and support, especially those that are mutually beneficial to the state parties. The current superficial and, on our understanding, wrong interpretation and implementation of the Rome Statute in relation to Kenya shows little or no accommodation to the concerns of an active cooperating state party with a rich history of local jurisprudence and best illustrates the application of the statute in a manner that is highly prejudicial to a member state's national, regional, and international interests. In fact, we believe it is an interpretation consistent with the political agenda rather than a quest for fighting impunity or seeking lasting peace or justice. Justice not only needs to be done, but also needs to be seen to be done.Likewise, and perhaps more importantly so, the independence of the court must not only be declared, but it should also be seen to be present, apparent, and real. Kenya is of the considered view that this is often not the case. We call upon all the organs of the court, that is the presidency, the office of the prosecutor, the judicial divisions, and the registry, to take immediate action to ensure that their independenceand that of the court is not undermined. Collectively, we need to take urgent steps to ensure that this is actualized sooner rather than later. In this regard, all state parties should feel that they have equal access to the court and to the office of the prosecutor, and that no state party or non-state party, for that matter, should have privileged access to the court or the office of the prosecutor.It is a matter of public notoriety that the court faces resource constraints. This has often been cited as a cause for its limited operations or involvement in situations that warrant the court's urgent interventions in order to curb the escalation of crimes against humanity and other serious crimes that threaten peace, security, and the well-being of the world. It is regrettable that the court is not seized of several ongoing situations affecting large populations of women and children,bearing the brunt of the effects of the commission of these serious crimes. In this regard, we call upon the court to prioritize its resource allocation to ensure that the finite financial resources, human capital, and constrained judicial time is directed to areas that warrant urgent intervention and involvement, that is, in the places and situations where such interventions are urgently needed and whose impact will be immediate and have a causal effect to alleviate human suffering. Madam President, Kenya considers that the Rome Statute is undergoing a test to its veracity, usefulness, and impartiality. The current state of implementation of the Rome Statute does not purport to do what was envisaged during the negotiations of the Rome Statute. In the current implementation of the Rome Statute, the international criminal justice system is faced with a unique historical conundrum that needs to be approached constructively. Constructively, intellectually, politically, and with a view to give a positive and constructive outcome and the full realization of the ideals espoused by the Rome Statute's creators. It may appear to the innocent eye that in the present state of interpretation and implementation, the ideals of the Rome Statute, namely punishment of serious crimes, fighting impunity, national healing and reconciliation, and reparations for victims may be achieved. However, it is Kenya's contention that the current implementation of the Rome Statute is counterproductive and antagonistic to these very ideals. It is in this regard that the international community and the court have a very special obligation. We should restrain ourselves from adopting a narrow, rigid, and agenda-driven interpretation of the Rome Statute that seeks to exclude all other processes relevant and important for sustained international as well as national peace. Instead, we should advocate for an all-inclusive and carefully calibrated system with clear benchmarks and achievable standards. To that end, we must prioritize and build on the gains of reconciliation, promote restorative justice, and foster national reconciliation, rather than focus on meting out raw punishment. Kenya, as a proud member of the community of nations, which has contributed immensely with limited resources to the achievement of peace, security, and multilateralism, will continue to engage actively on matters relating to the Rome Statute and the International Criminal Court. I thank you for your kind attention.
Merci le représentant du Kenya et je donne maintenant la parole au représentant de l'Afrique du Sud.
Madam President, on behalf of my delegation, I would like to thank you for affording us the floor. I'm also delighted to welcome His Excellency Judge Song, President of the International Criminal Court to New York. We thank him and his team of judges, not only for this report of the ICC to the United Nations contained in document A/68/314, but also for their tireless efforts in the promotion of international criminal justice with the ultimate objective of securing a peaceful world for all of us who live in it. As always, we found the report to be comprehensive, and it touches on very important aspects relating to the work of the ICC. Madam President, we have particularly taken note of part two of the report on judicial proceedings. As a firm believer in judicial independence, we shall restrict our comments on this chapter. The effective and efficient functioning of the ICC itself, being independent but also accountable in its administration, is an important factor in bringing an end to impunity and for setting standards for the prosecution and adjudication of the most heinous crimes of concern to humanity. By trying those responsible, the world exposes the truth of the atrocities and deters future crimes and helps to bring justice for the victims. Victims deserve justice. This will happen by strengthening institutions of justice nationally and internationally. The ICC is central to this vision and must be strengthened to deliver justice everywhere. Madam President, South Africa continues to believe that an important tool in the fight against impunity remains efforts to build national capacity to investigate and prosecute serious crimes of concern to the international community. It is thus appropriate that complementarity is at the heart of the Rome Statute. It is for this reason that South Africa, together with Denmark, continues to exert efforts to mainstream complementarity-related activities. For South Africa, the Rome Statute and the International Criminal Court it created does not operate in a vacuum, but is rather an important element in a new system of international law. This modern system is one characterized by greater solidarity, which, while remaining true to the principle of sovereignty, prioritizes the common good. The foundations for this modern system of law are, of course, contained in the United Nations Charter, and in particular, the purposes and principles of the United Nations, namely to maintain international peace and security and to bring about peaceful solutions to conflict in conformity with the principles of justice and international law. International criminal law, as it stands today, is built upon the pursuit of peace through the fight against impunity. Already in 1946, the Nuremberg Tribunal recognized that only through fighting impunity can the provisions of international law be enforced and peace attained. The relationship between peace and justice is therefore ubiquitous in the development of modern international law. And this relationship between peace and justice was evident to the drafters of the ICC statute. We are firmly committed to the idea that peace and security on the one hand and justice and the fight against impunity on the other hand must go hand in hand. We find these values, which we emphasize are the foundation of the modern system in which we interact, to be reflected in the Rome Statute creating the ICC. It is important that we remember that we have said above, namely, that the relationship between peace and justice is ubiquitous in the foundation of our modern system, and it is similarly present in the Rome Statute. Therefore, peace is also important, and peace must be given an opportunity to flourish in any given situation. By now, all of us are familiar with contents of Article 16, which provides that investigations and prosecutions may not be proceeded with for a period of a year after the adoption of a Chapter 7 resolution by the Security Council. Article 16 is present in the statute precisely to ensure a complementary relationship between the pursuit of justice on the one hand and the attainment of peace on the other. It exists in the statute precisely to ensure that while pursuing justice, peace must be given a chance to flourish. As members of the international community concerned about peace and justice, we are concerned about indictments which may derail peace processes. For this reason, we support the call made by the African Union for the Security Council to adopt an Article 16 resolution in the context of Kenya. A precedent was created by Resolution 1422 of 2002, which was adopted by the Security Council at its 45772 meeting on 12 July 2002. The Security Council, during its adoption of this resolution, emphasized the importance of international peace and security. I'd like to quote this resolution's operative paragraph 1, which reads as follows: Security Council, acting under Chapter 7 of the Charter of the United Nations requests, consistent with the provisions of Article 16 of the Rome Statute, that the ICC, if a case arises involving current or former officials or personnel from contributing state not a party to the Rome Statute over acts or omissions relating to the United Nations established or authorized operation, shall for a 12-month period starting 1 July 2002 not commence or proceed with investigation or prosecution of any such case unless the Security Council decides otherwise. Close quote. It is because of the relationship between the peace and justice as it exists in the new value-laden system of international law that we see no contradiction between South Africa's continued support for the ICC as a judicial body mandated to dispense justice on the one hand, and our pursuit for the attainment of peace in Kenya through political means, including through the process provided for in Article 16 of the statute. For South Africa, therefore, peace and justice must necessarily go together. We can't pursue one without regard to the other, and we certainly can't pursue one at the expense of the other. They are two sides of the same coin. And while the court continues to pursue justice, the political organs of the system we have created, including the AU Peace and Security Council and the UN Security Council, must use all means available to them to ensure the attainment and maintenance of peace and security. In conclusion, Madam President, the International Criminal Court is an institution designed to create a better world through fighting impunity. We will continue to support the court so that it can grow from strength to strength. I thank you, Madam President.
Je remercie le représentant de l'Afrique du Sud et je donne maintenant la parole au représentant du Canada.
Madam President, I have the honor to speak on behalf of Canada. Let me first thank President Song for his report on the activities of the International Criminal Court. Canada supports efforts to ensure that the perpetrators of the most serious crimes of international concern are held to account. It is the duty of every state to prosecute within their jurisdiction those responsible for serious international crimes. But if states are unwilling or unable to do so, international mechanisms may fill the gaps and serve as a court of last resort. The court's decision on 11th of October 2013 that the case against Mr. Al-Sanusi is inadmissible, as he is currently subject to domestic proceedings conducted by the Libyan competent authorities, provides an illustration of the principle of complementarity in action. Canada takes note that 122 states are now parties to the Rome Statute, following the ratification by Côte d'Ivoire on 15th of February this year. We note that concerns have been raised by the African Union and several states in relation to the court. We are hopeful that the upcoming Assembly of States parties will provide us with an opportunity to understand these concerns better. Canada encourages all states to abide by their international commitments. It is disturbing that some arrest warrants are not being executed. Madame la Présidente, le Canada réaffirme la nécessité de faire preuve de discipline en matière budgétaire. Les États doivent rendre des comptes à leurs contribuables, de sorte que nous devons insister pour que les mécanismes internationaux apportent une contribution d'un bon rapport qualité-coût. Même si nous notons que la Cour a réalisé des économies au cours des dernières années, grâce à des gains d'efficacité administrative et à l'établissement des priorités, il faut déployer plus d'efforts pour que les coûts n'augmentent pas. Merci.
Je remercie le représentant du Canada. Nous avons entendu le dernier orateur inscrit pour le débat sur le point 75 de l'ordre du jour. Un représentant a demandé à exercer son droit de réponse. Je rappelle aux représentants que la durée des déclarations au titre du droit de réponse est limitée à 10 minutes pour la première intervention et à 5 minutes pour la seconde intervention et que les délégations doivent prendre la parole de leur place. Je donne la parole aux représentants de la République arabe syrienne.
الإشارة إلى ما تضمنته بيانات بعض الوفود بشأن الوضع في بلاد سوريا وفي إطار ممارسة وفد بلادي حق الرد يود وفد بلادي الإشارة إلى النقاط التالية. أولاً، إن المسؤولية الأساسية في إقامة العدل والمساءلة تقع على عاتق الدول المعنية ذاتها. ثانياً، إنه من غير المقبول استخدام مفاهيم نبيلة استخدام كتحقيق العدالة لخدمة أهداف سياسية وأجندات مشبوهة. تجعل من مثل هذه القيم السامية مسار تضارب في الرؤى بدل أن تكون محل إجماع. ثالثاً، إن التعامل بانتقائية مع الأحداث الجارية في بلادي وبطريقة تحمل الحكومة السورية وحدها المسؤولية الكاملة عن تلك الأحداث وتجاهل الجرائم التي ترتكبها المجموعات الإرهابية المسلحة التي تضم آلاف المتطرفين والتكفيريين المستقدمين من الخارج والمرتزقة الأجانب. إن تجاهل جرائم هؤلاء يبرز الازدواجية التي يمارسها البعض في المحافل الدولية. إن العدالة يجب أن تكون بعيدة عن التسييس والانتقائية وازدواجية المعايير، وهذا يقتضي عدم التغافل عن جرائم عدوان واحتلال وجرائم حرب مؤكدة. كما أنه لا بد من مساءلة المسؤولين في حكومات بعض الدول المعروفة الذين يقومون بإرسال الإرهابيين والمرتزقة إلى سوريا من جميع أنحاء العالم. ويدعموهم بالمال والسلاح والتدريب ليتمكنوا من ارتكاب الجرائم الإرهابية. إن ممارسات الدول الداعمة للإرهاب تستهدف سوريا كدولة وكشعب، ومن البديهي أن الحرص على الشعب السوري لا يكون بإرسال المتطرفين والمرتزقة للقتل والتدمير. السيد الرئيس، نؤكد تقديرنا لكل من هو لديه حرص صادق على الشعب السوري ونجدد التأكيد أن الطريق لمساعدة الشعب السوري يتمثل في بذل الجهود الصادقة لوقف العنف. ودعم الجهود الهادفة إلى عقد اجتماع جنيف 2. وإيجاد حل الأزمة السورية من خلال الحوار الوطني الشامل بين السوريين أنفسهم. السوريين وحدهم هم الذين سيصنعون مستقبلهم وبإرادتهم المستقلة وعبر صناديق الانتخاب. إننا ندعو حكومة سويسرا التي ستستضيف مؤتمر جنيف على أرض بلادها لاحترام حق الشعب السوري في اتخاذ قراراته بإرادته المنفردة. كما ندعوها للتيقظ والانتباه لصادراتها العسكرية. فمن المؤلم أن بعض السوريين قتلوا السيدة رئيسة باستخدام قنابل سويسرية الصنع. سويسرا هي الدولة التي هي الدولة الوديعة لاتفاقيات جنيف المتعلقة بالقانون الدولي الإنساني. هذا الكلام لسنا نحن من نقوله، هذا الكلام أكدته صحيفتي لو ماتان ديمانش وزونتاك زايتونغ السويسريتين. وأقرته الحكومة السويسرية. وشكرا سيدة الرئيسة.
Je donne la parole au représentant de la Suisse.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I take the liberty of taking the floor again, as the distinguished representative of Syria has mentioned Switzerland, and there are certain points on which we would even agree in the statement made by Syria. One was that it is foremost to the Syrian authorities to see that the crimes that are currently committed in Syria are addressed by judicial means, and that is also a point that we stressed in our statement, indicating that such proceedings do not take place, hence this letter to the Security Council to refer the situation in Syria to the International Criminal Court. And that's the second point. We mentioned the situation in Syria. We did not speak of any side in the conflict. We did not pinpoint any side committing crimes, but we mentioned the situation in the whole of Syria. And the third point is this indication that Syrian people were killed by bombs, as the distinguished delegate from Syria has mentioned, made or manufactured in Switzerland. I just wish to say that first, there were no bombs, there were it was hand grenades, and we certainly deeply regret that Syrian people have lost their lives through hand grenades that were manufactured in Switzerland. But it is equally important to stress that Switzerland did not export these hand grenades to Syria, and did not so in the past, and did not so at present times. These hand grenades were brought to Syria by other countries, independent of the will and the control of the Swiss government. And the Swiss government has publicly stated how deeply sorry it is that these hand grenades have found their way to Syria and that they have killed Syrian peoples. And I reiterate this deep regret on our side that this was the case, but I also stress that we had no control over the use of these hand grenades. I thank you very much.
Je considérais que l'Assemblée générale a ainsi terminé l'examen du point 75 de l'ordre du jour. Il en est ainsi décidé. La séance est levée.